I listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
Not unlike European Jews who watch the world close in on them slowly, perhaps barely perceptibly, at the start of Nazism, colored people in the South would first react in denial and disbelief to the rising hysteria, then helpless to stop it, attempt a belated resistance, not knowing and not able to imagine how far the supremacists would go. The outcomes for both groups were wildly divergent, one suffering unspeakable loss and genocide, the other enduring nearly a century of apartheid, pogroms, and mob executions. But the hatreds and fears that fed both assaults were not dissimilar and relied on arousing the passions of the indifferent to mount so complete an attack. The South began acting in outright defiance of the 14th Amendment in 1868. Which granted the right to due process and equal protection to anyone born in the United States, and it ignored the 15th Amendment in 1880, which guaranteed all men the right to vote. Politicians began writing these anti-black sentiments all the way to the governor's mansions throughout the South and to seats in the U.S. Senate. Hey, welcome to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. Your host Rod and
Karen,
and we're live on a Sunday morning, right afternoon, ready to give you. Literally just afternoon, 12:01. Ready to give you guys some podcasting. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic. Just search for us, the Black Guy Who Tips or Reading Rainbow, however you guys want to do it. Butterflies in the sky, nigga, we go twice as high.
Come on.
You can find us there. We appreciate the 5-star reviews, and we also appreciate the people that leave feedback through various ways, email, comments on the website, votes in the polls, voicemail, stuff like that. Although I do have to tell you guys a little guilty pleasure that I have. I think I may have told you about it or not, I don't remember. But you know how sometimes we get these like harassing emails or emails that are just like by people that, you know, clearly want to fight or take shit out of context, because we talk about a lot of hot button issues, and when you talk about shit and you have integrity and stuff, people like want to try to tear you down. I have a folder, and I don't know, maybe this will help you guys too. It helped me with not responding to these type of people that have bad faith arguments. I have a folder in my Gmail that's just for idiots. So if you just say some stupid shit to me, you just go in the idiot box. Like, I don't feel like I have to like respond. I don't feel the need to try to reason with you. It's like, oh, you're irrational, or you're being tried, this is fun for you to troll me. Idiot folder. You know, I've been doing it for a few years, and it's honestly stopped me from coming on the podcast and talk back to people like as if they represent a large group of people.
A very small percentage.
I know there was one specific fan who used to like create fake email accounts just to email me and hope that I would say shit on the website about on the podcast about them, or take pictures and put it on my Facebook page or something. And you know, people been following, they know I haven't done that in a long time, because I just don't want to. I know that that's part of the thrill for them,
right?
Is I got this person's
that's
attention.
A part of the game.
Yeah, they put me on a pedestal, and then getting my attention becomes like a big deal for them, because their lives are terrible. But yeah, it was just something that I had to relate today, because I was like, you know what, it's been a long time since I've even like done that, to be like, we didn't say that, like, for who, you know. 99.999% of people listening get it, and then there's always that one person that's like, but I would like to take you out of context. If they do it to Beyonce, if they do it to Obama, they'll do it to me too.
Ain't
nobody special out here. Anyway, the quote that I started the show with today was The Warmth of Other Suns, which is a book I just started reading because I finished another book yesterday. So 2 days ago, I believe. So, you know, it's good to be like, yo, I finished another book. It's time for me to get on some new. So, you know, I'm kind of excited about, you know, starting a new book. I've heard a lot about this one. It's about the Great Migration.
Okay.
Which is,
I was about to say, which direction? You know, it's a lot of the migrations.
Well, the Great Migration in America specifically refers to, it's by Isabel Wilkerson. The Great Migration in America specifically refers to black people that moved out of the South to the North.
Okay.
Most people will term it as like from like the 1890s to the 1930s or 20s or something, but it really went on to like the 1970s if you think about it, because either under Jim Crow and then under segregation, black people still were getting treated like shit in the South, and they were moving out, which hurt, you know, production in the South as far as like cotton and farms and stuff, because black people were doing all that labor.
Yeah, that's why they had to get machines to do the shit.
Right, and it was a slow economic war too, and also it was a movement that wasn't organized. It didn't have a leader. There was no like one black person telling everybody we gotta go. It
and
was
they don't know how to handle that because you don't have a target.
Yeah, so it was a lot of black people very bravely at a time when, you know, trains were mass transit, you know, if you were lucky enough to have a car, you know.
Yes.
There were black people that left the South that literally had never had shoes, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. The bravery of our ancestors to even be able to do some shit like that, like
travel hundreds of thousands of miles by foot, a lot of them.
I was nervous to hop on a plane to travel. I am indeed not my ancestors' hands, okay? And I mean that in the opposite way. Like, I don't want that smoke, because they was like, I've never been to a big city. Now I'm gonna live in New York. Now I'm living in Chicago, you know. So yeah, the book is about that, and I'm enjoying it so far, man. But I love this period of history and stuff, because I just wasn't taught about it in school. Nobody talked about it in school. If they brought it up, they would just be like, it was called like the definition, not no right. Personal stories,
right?
No numbers, no facts, just. And then black people moved from the South and they moved to the North, and it was called the Great Migration. Write that down, and then that's an answer on your social studies test,
right?
But did you internalize that knowledge? Did you realize that at one point 90% of black people lived in the South?
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the great Migration, I want to say it was like 40% or something like that, or more than 40% had moved out, something. It was something like that, where you got to consider half of a populace of America in one location just moving and spreading
and
throughout.
Nobody's wondering why. Nobody, because they don't give a fuck.
Oh, they wondered why. They wonder why. I mean, you got to consider it was white landowners losing people, but because they couldn't conceptualize of black people's humanity, they would not ascribe the common decency and motivations to us that they would for themselves. So
right.
They would look at it like, these black people, you give them a little scrap of land, they just quit working. And it's like, no, they work for themselves. That's called being an entrepreneur, you know. And then of course you find out about sharecropping and all that stuff. So like, it's been interesting. And it seems like the way that Isabel Wilkerson tackled this was to find three different people who are still alive and interview them about their life's journey and how they and like how they moved from the South to different locations and why. You know, one dude wanted to be a doctor. He was in the South, they wouldn't let him be a doctor.
Mm-mm.
He had all the schooling and everything.
Come on.
You know, the like I said, the woman I'm reading about now at Ida May, like she was in the South and just, you know, dealing with racism, you know, her father died early and stuff. So it's like interesting to see different people give that human story in a way that I never learned in school, never, not once. Like maybe I learned the term, I have never thought about the knowledge and what it was. And you know, reading Ida B. Wells, the autobiography for her, and reading this is kind of like enlightening to see, like, oh, this is what people was dealing with. So
right. And most of the black people that are you know, most of us are probably like second, third, fourth, fifth generation of these people that migrated to these areas. A lot of people, particularly like somebody said, Chicago, New York, DC, like above the quote-unquote Mason-Dixon line.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back to your roots, a high percentage of them niggas came from down South. Most of them were not originally born and raised, quote unquote, when they came to America up there. They migrated to those areas.
A large percent. It's sad because when you think about the shame black people feel about country black people in certain areas, like, you know, the way that people shit on the South and black people in the South. Look no further than when this current crop of candidates running, and how Pete Buttigieg sold out Southern black vote in South Carolina, how it was Bernie Sanders before him. Everybody forgets that in 2016, you know, they just blame Hillary for his loss.
South.
they blame Hillary for his loss, but he never really made true inroads with black people. Mm-hmm. In mass, he had some young black people on his team, but he didn't make it in mass with all black people, and that's to his detriment, you know. And it's interesting to think about the way that these things still reflect today, because I remember when it was, the numbers were coming back and it was like black people in the South are not really fucking with Bernie. The anti-blackness jumped out of not just his white supporters, but a lot of his black supporters,
right,
started talking about black people being too stupid and all this shit. And the vast majority of black people who don't live in the South come from the fucking South.
Right.
You all got here through ports in Charleston and Virginia and shit like that. Not like, very few black people can trace their ancestry back in America. If they came from, through slavery, or through the era of slavery, very few black people came here as freed people. Very few black people came here and, you know, got the real indentured servitude treatment and really had it respected. Most of us, came from chattel slavery. If you're an immigrant from outside of America, you mostly came from chattel slavery.
Come on.
You know, like, it's like you were affected by it or somehow. In this world, there's, even if you're from Africa, you were still affected by, you know, colonization and the slave trade. So to think about the disdain people have for Southern accents, Southern mannerisms, Southern black folks, it's almost sad, and then the shame that people feel about it, because, you know, it's a lot of like mocking and shit, but that's internalized shame that you have for your grandparents, for your father and mother, for your great grandparents, and the people that really were brave enough to pack up all their shit and leave it on a whim's notice, knowing they were leaving all their land behind, knowing they were leaving in many times places they could not go back because people would want to kill them. Mm-hmm. And all this stuff. So yeah, I love this book so far.
And also, that shows to go the ignorance of people, and even to today it is so fucking frustrating whenever I you know, you kind of hear black people up north talk down south about the laws and shit that we have down here, but yet it was stop and frisk up there. You know, that shit is the same fucking thing, right? It stems from racism. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, they say very ignorant shit like the police don't stop them too. Yeah, the police stop us too, but the police also stop y'all too. The police also harass y'all up there too. You know, that's why when certain things happen to people up north, they be like, well, I never thought it would happen to me up here. I'm up north. Racism don't give a fuck if you up north or down south. And is you black? Right. Is you black?
Well, you know what it is that a lot of these states, and I guess it still works on certain people, hopefully not as much anymore, but a lot of these states used to advertise themselves as these destinations that were free of racism. And they were telling the truth for the most part that they were free of racism in the north because they were free of black people. So there wasn't any racism to be needed, really, when there were no black people, you know. But when, like, say Chicago went from like 40,000 black people to 1 million, you know, to where you were like less than 5% of the city population to 40% of the city population, well, all of a sudden now Chicago's one of the most racist cities in America. Well, how'd that fucking happen? It's in the north, right? No, it's just, the racism goes where white people's uncomfortableness goes, and they're uncomfortable when it's too many quote unquote black people. And so yeah, a large part of that is this. And then the other thing about that excerpt I read, they were talking about politicians riding that to office, you know, and they would be saying bombastic shit like, I don't care, hang every nigger if we have to get you know, to get the South under control. Like, they would say shit like that. And you know, and this was not just idle rhetoric. You're talking about a time where people were literally lynching folks, and that was a signal, like, we gotta get out of town. You know, they just lynched two boys for winking at a white woman. We gotta get out of town. We don't know if it happened or not, we just know they did. The politicians, how's that different from Republicans now? How's that different from Donald Trump? Did he not ride racism straight to fucking office? Like, while everyone's trying to examine economic fragility and you know, white people's you just hardworking white people can't find a job and their anxiety over that, while you're examining that with employment numbers under Obama that were through the roof for white folks anyway, When you're examining that and still trying to come out with any reason but racism, that's what happened back then. That, like, after those during those 8 years of Reconstruction, that's what the fuck eroded everything, was white people refusing to believe these Southern white people were really as fucking evil as black people said they were. People they went to war with, slave owning white people, and they scapegoated black people instead. So
yeah, and I think for me it's very frustrating, because it's almost that thing where history, you know, repeats itself, and a lot of, and we've talked about this before, a lot of black people buy into anti-blackness and don't even realize that they bought into it hook, line, and sinker. And a lot of times, you know, people talk about the white man, a lot of times you actually push the white man agenda, unknowingly pushing the white man's agenda out of your lack of knowledge, lack of history, lack of knowing yourself, lack of knowing that you shitting on these quote unquote country bunkers down south, knowing all joke society, if you track your lineage, if you go back in your family's history, some connection to you somewhere,
of course,
started down here.
If you black, yeah, that's what it's gonna be. Like, you have a very low percentage of black Americans who don't have a traces to slavery. It's a very low percentage. So to shit on this idea of slaves in the South and all this shit, it's real fucked up. Anyway, welcome to the show, guys. That's been our Reading Rainbow.
Reading Rainbow segment.
A Reading Rainbow.
Yes, take a look. It's in a book.
I can do anything. But yeah, so just skip the first 20 minutes of every show, guys. A lot of news has been happening, and I definitely want to talk about it for shizzle. So let's go ahead and get into that stuff. Colin Kaepernick had a workout. Now, I didn't talk about this shit all week last week, really. I talked about it a little bit on the sports show, and no offense, it's because I knew what it was. I know game is game. I didn't expect not a single person's mind to be changed. Raise your hand if you change your mind this weekend. I'll wait. Right. Everybody feels the way they felt before this shit. I still feel the way I felt before this shit. Mm-hmm. To be fair. But let's go into the breakdown of the events. And there's a lot of rumor and speculation out here, so not all of it's being reported as what confirmed, like, out of people's mouth shit. So allow for the idea that some of this information may change over the next few days, because I don't know what's true and what's not. And you, when you involve in two parties that don't trust each other, and would rather go to the public than each other, it's hard to really know what is 100% on the up and up, you know? So, essentially, last Tuesday, word was sent from the NFL to Colin Kaepernick's people, you have 2 hours to confirm, but would you guys like to do a Saturday tryout, basically, and we will invite, like, all the teams in the NFL to watch you perform at an NFL stadium, and it'll be closed to the media. And by the way, I heard this on Tuesday, not Saturday. It'll be closed to the media. Just you and the NFL people will film it, and then send it out to NFL teams. Now, this, a lot of people didn't like this for a few reasons. One, trials are normally done on Tuesdays, which is an NFL like off day. That's normally when your GMs, your coaches, your higher up staff have the day off, so they can travel to see something like Colin Kaepernick in person perform and maybe talk to him, interview him, I don't know. But that was a big thing, right? You're doing it on Saturday when you know game is on Sunday and Monday. Who's going to be able to attend with high top brass, right? Good point. The other thing people were like, why 2 hour limit on whether he says yes or not? You know, I don't know how long a limit would have been reasonable, but they said 2 hours. Kaepernick's team did agree to it, and he tweeted like he was excited about it. Like, yeah, I got a child. I've told y'all I've been ready. I'm about to, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it's like, cool, you know, seemed like this worked out. Another rumor that came out was Jay-Z was the one who orchestrated this. I'm not 1000% sure if that's true or not, but it's been reported several different places. I saw TMZ reported through a source that Jay-Z was disappointed with the outcome, but it seems that Jay-Z, despite what people said, that it wasn't just a money thing for him or power grab. It seems like to some extent he really did try to get this dude at least a tryout. Obviously you can feel how you want to. I mean, the NFL could, any of these teams could have tried him out. A couple of them, I believe, have possibly, or at least considered it. Mm-hmm. So it's not like Jay-Z can make him be on a team. Mm-mm. And neither can Roger Goodell, by the way. People keep thinking it's at Roger Goodell's feet, but you know, I'll get into what I think happened at the end. But but that's the rumor, is that Jay-Z actually was instrumental in getting him this this chance. And the rest of this is a lot of speculation, so I'll get to that. So he gets to like Atlanta on Thursday. It's supposed to be in like Georgia. I'm assuming it's gonna be at the Superdome, because I mean, where else in Atlanta has an NFL facility that you would practice at? So
I mean, not unless you have to go to a college facility,
right? People were reporting right away, media people on Twitter were like, yeah, media not gonna be able to attend. Some people was like, well, maybe we can have media attending, live tweeted and stuff like that. Like, they were trying to figure ways around it. I don't know if they were negotiating that or not. I heard conflicting reports, but mostly I heard media was not going to be able to attend. The other thing is, there was a lot of conflicting reports about which teams would be there. Now, it started off with people being like, no teams going to be there. 8 teams, 11 teams, 24 teams, 31 teams, all the teams. You know,
it was all over the place.
Lots. And with all this stuff, I'll tell you one thing that was interesting to watch on social media is people cherry picked the articles that they felt most comfortable with, aligning with their already agenda. So,
of course,
if they were very supportive of Kaepernick, then they would normally share the articles that said, like, no teams are plan on attending. And it's like, well, what are the odds that no teams plan on attending?
What are the odds, right?
Come on, y'all. It's just what it is now. People share what they feel comfortable agreeing with, not with what might be the truth. So,
correct.
The final number I saw settled on was somewhere around 24 teams were planning on attending the workout in its original location on Saturday at original time. Okay. And then on Saturday, as it was unfolding, I'm trying to make sure I remember everything, but as it was unfolding, it was like Kaepernick's people put out a press release that essentially said they were moving locations. Once again, I saw various misreportings of it. The NFL said they're moving locations. The NFL said the workout is off. The NFL, well, it sounds like now after, and maybe this will change, but after the press release and after his statements to the press after his workout, it sounds like he and his people decided to move out of the NFL facility, and the NFL had not like decided which wide receivers it was going to give them to use, you know, like he was gonna get some generic public defender wide receivers, I don't know.
player number one,
right? So he flew in his own like homies that he's used to working with to do his wide receiver drills and stuff. Mm-hmm. But he also decided, this is all alleged and I have not seen proof either way, but he decided that the waiver that he got was not, because you have to sign a waiver when you do a tryout with the NFL, typically it protects them from like injury and shit. So like if you twist your fucking knee running, you can't like sue us for that shit, or you know, stuff like that. Supposedly everyone who does a trial with the NFL signs a form of a waiver. The people on Kaepernick's side, his team is saying this waiver has some special exceptions in it that they did not fuck with. So like I don't know exactly what it was. I've seen speculated that it was he was not going to be able to sue them or something. I don't know. I also have, you know, a friend that kind of has some insight to the NFL that works in that process, and was like, it was a standard waiver. I'm gonna be frank with y'all, I don't know who to believe, and I think a lot of bias is coming into it because we don't want to believe the NFL on any reason for anything, but at the same time we want to believe Kaepernick is righteous on everything. And I don't know, you know what I'm saying, like I don't know why this person would lie to me, you know, at the same time. And I really think if we can't get a picture of the fucking document, we can't get a PDF of it, like, what, you know, like, and maybe there's a reason they don't want us to see it, but I'm just saying, like, why the fuck can't we just see it then, if that's the problem? And, you know, in a certain way, the NFL can't move as quote-unquote petty as, like, Cap can. Cap's a kind of an individual representing himself, and then, you know, his team represents him somewhat. But if the NFL starts doing some shit to be like, he lying, y'all, it's gonna also look like, you know, they might get sued again. Who fucking knows? Like, a company has to move a certain way, you know. Mm-hmm. Even when they doing shady shit, they still gotta move a certain way to make it look not shady.
Right.
So anyway, so that the waiver was one thing, and then the other thing is, since the media wasn't going to be able to, like, broadcast it live or whatever, Kaepernick and his team decided to move the tryout to a high school football field, and he brought his own wide receivers, and they were going to YouTube live it, and then he talked to the press for a minute and 30 seconds afterwards, and that was all he had to say. Okay, with that, I saw some of the clips and stuff, and people was like, yeah, he had to do this to, like, show us that he could still play. Here's the thing, man. He's been putting out clips of him doing that shit for 3 years. So nobody, raise your hand if you actually said, well, now that I saw that tape, I think he can play in the NFL. Everybody knows this nigga can play in the NFL. His team supposedly was worried that the NFL would somehow doctor the footage that they sent to teams to make him look bad on purpose so that teams wouldn't sign him. Feel how you feel about that. I'm gonna be frank, I don't really think the NFL was going to do that, because then what would be the fucking point of scheduling the workout? You don't have to tar and feather this man at this point, because you honestly won already. Like, oh, so teams that claim he can't play quarterback need more ammunition? They don't. There's 3 years of him not playing for them to be like, yeah, we don't want him, he hasn't played in 3 years. Like, there, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy the way that these NFL teams blackballed him. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm trying to concentrate on the things we all agree on, and I'll get to that at the end, but I'm not 100% sure that this was as much of a sham as people claiming it was. And I still think it was shammy, but I don't know that it was going to be them showing every incomplete pass he made in 40 minutes and be like, he's trash, we're out. You know what I mean? It just didn't make sense. But then, you know, the people did, media watched them. People wrote back their kind of progress reports, and everyone agrees, good enough to be in the NFL. At least as a backup, minimum. Like, everyone knows this already. I don't think this is a controversial thing to say. So then, after the workout, he does an interview where he basically says, we did this because we want full transparency and everything, and the ball's in your court, and my agent is willing to meet with any team at any time, and I'm willing to try out at any time for anyone, and, you know, basically thank y'all for coming out and the work y'all do, and the people want to hear from the NFL, and da 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 da. And and I forgot to mention the most important aspect. He took his shirt off, and under it said Kunta Kinte for his shirt.
That's the clip I seen. I mean yeah. It's kind of a steal, because I didn't see none of the clips.
With all that stuff, my personal opinion is Jay-Z and Roger Goodell would really like Colin Kaepernick to be in the NFL. I think what most people don't, and it's Roger Goodell's fault, by the way, but what most people don't recognize is Roger Goodell has limited power even as commissioner.
Right.
Roger Goodell's not richer than any of those owners.
Mm-mm.
And while he likes the appearances of I'm the big boss, the principal of the NFL, he's not. And this is showing the limits of his power. The reason I feel this way is because I remember when he also was trying to get teams to give Michael Sam a look. Mm-hmm. Everybody forgets about Michael Sam, but Michael Sam's mm-hmm. a really good litmus test for Colin Kaepernick.
Right.
But Roger Goodell thought, this looks bad. It looks like our league is blackballing the first openly gay athlete to try to play in the NFL. And I don't want to be part of that, you know, that culture. I don't want to be the commissioner who let this happen. So he was pressuring teams into giving him tryouts, pressuring them into drafting him, all this shit. And it did look bad, because every draft board before the fucking draft had Michael Sam being drafted.
Yes, it did.
And now there's a bunch of revisionist history on the fucking defensive player of the SEC.
Right.
Suddenly he was sorry as hell.
People act like this nigga was a nobody, and it was like, oh man, no. Him being gay played 100% of the factor on why people was like, nope.
Suddenly he was sorry as hell.
And suddenly.
His combine numbers were just out of the league worthy, right?
Come on, suddenly Seymour, what's happening here?
You know, I don't know if y'all remember that. The other thing too is Roger Goodell recently, quote unquote, won a battle with Jerry Jones. So Jerry Jones wanted Roger Goodell no longer to be commissioner of the NFL because he felt Roger Goodell didn't step up and lead on the NFL protest where people took a knee.
Right, because he was having a fucking fit and showing his ass and ended up getting the Papa John's dude involved, and he went and fucked his Papa John dollars up.
And he tried to usurp Roger Goodell as commissioner and get somebody else in there. But the other owners, since they're all making money hand over fist and Roger Goodell's been good for business, they were like, no, just leave him alone. But here's the thing that people didn't recognize with that. While Roger Goodell got his new contract and got his money, and he's probably gone after this, by the way, while he did that, he still kind of lost. Because Roger Goodell wanted the owners to understand we should not do anything about people taking a knee.
Mm-mm.
Everybody forgets this because he's the face of the NFL and he's a white dude. You know, people like, he's not Adam Silver. He's not like, I encourage you to take a knee. He was just kind of like, look, this is their right, whether you agree with it or not.
Like, y'all actually making it a thing by fucking paying it attention, and now it don't fucking matter because now we don't show the shits no more, so nobody gives a fuck.
Right. So, but it was interesting though, because I don't think people peeped up the nuance in that, because they was like, the NFL, Roger Goodell synonymous, they're all evil, they all hate Colin Kaepernick, they all want him out of the league, it's collusion, it's blackballing. Roger Goodell tried to save the owners from themselves. Like, listen, we're gonna get sued and lose. We're gonna get deposed. Just fucking, like, one of you guys, bite the bullet, get the guy on the team. Right?
Right. Initially, nobody was willing to.
And every time someone did kind of want to give Colin a chance, or you would hear rumblings of it, they sounded scared, because the NFL owners are old, rich, white men, for the most part, except for the brand new dude for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And they only care and are fearful of fucking white fans. They don't care about black fans.
Oh, no, we don't count.
Like, our protestations, our I'm not watching the NFL no more, cause Kaepernick ain't got a job, all that shit, they don't give a fuck about that. It's like it didn't happen.
Right.
When they talk about Papa John's sales numbers going down, they say it's cause of NFL kneeling, and the assumption is because white people hate the NFL and they hate kneeling, so they don't buy Papa John's. They never think cause black people are mad Kaepernick's being ostracized.
Right. It was like, fuck Papa John's too. It's like all at the same time. Everybody's right. Going fuck the NFL.
Nobody cares about us, right? Except other black people.
And the thing is, our numbers shift shit, but we don't get credit for our numbers shifting shit.
Right. When ratings went down, they said it's because white people were upset. Not black people were upset. The white people were upset with players continuing to take a knee. You know, I won't reiterate the idea that of the NFL is a stand-in for the American police over abuse. I know that the NFL can't stop that. Every player could take a knee every weekend and they're still gonna kill niggas, but I think what's most important here, and this is the thing I said I wanted to get to, I do think this was done in good faith on Jay-Z and Goodell's part. I do not think that they gave Colin Kaepernick a easy road in, because my guess is with the 2-hour window, with the no media, with the waiver or whatever, the NFL was trying to see if Colin Kaepernick was willing to play ball. And I don't mean play football. I mean, if he was willing to capitulate a bit, bend a bit to the league in the way they would like him to enter the league. They both, like, it's, to me, it's kind of a pissing contest between both parties at this point. And Kaepernick, as evidenced by the shirt, is like, I want to enter, I will play football on my terms or not at all. And I think both of them have a fucking valid point, because you are asking for the NFL's check, and the NFL is like going to want to know you're going to carry water for them. Not saying it's fair, not saying it's right, obviously it's fucked up. But even the motherfuckers that beat women and fucking rape people and murder people and drive drunk, they all have to toe a bit of a line when it comes to the NFL, or they have to go. Perfect example, Greg Hardy.
Right.
Greg Hardy was a dude they let back in knowing what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And he was cool until he started getting in the locker room talking about, I forget what the last thing was, but it was either like hitting women again or something.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it was like, he gotta go. It wasn't like Greg Hardy became a terrible NFL player.
Mm-mm.
He showed he would not carry water for the NFL and just act even close to sane for 5 minutes after a game. They were like, well, now we can't even pretend that we don't see this.
Right.
And so with Colin, I think Colin is like, I'm gonna be agitating. That's what I do. I'm an activist, you know. They tried to play me, I'm playing them back, you know. They now, thank you NFL for getting all eyes on me. Now I control right. the narrative. Here's my camera showing me throwing. Mm-hmm. Here's my t-shirt,
I'm getting YouTube views,
right? Here's my 1 minute and 35 second comment to the press. I'm not going in any more details. Mm-hmm. I'm not really saying nothing,
which means people views and opinions on me are not really gonna change.
Here's my press release ahead of the workout to get ahead of the story. Like, I mean, the dude is super savvy. I think he's, I'll say this again, perfect for the internet age of activism.
Yes.
Because he's really good at not saying much and letting us fill in the blanks and say everything for him. I saw people that said, like, bar none, if he would have come in and played the game the quote unquote the right way, you know, showed some capitulation to the NFL, came in, did the workout, there were people that were saying a range between D'Maurice Smith, the guy who's over the players union, he was like, the NFLPA, I mean Players Association, he was like, if he comes in and does a workout, he'll have a job in 2 weeks. I'm sure of it. I don't know if he's saying that hopefully, or if he's saying that because, like, oh, I know, I've talked to teams, we're ready to have Colin back if he just comes in and plays a game. I don't know why that man would be lying or not, because the PA is kind of the opposite of the NFL brass. Like, they don't really get a lot of he don't get a lot of credit for standing up for the NFL. He gets a lot of credit for standing up for the players. So why the fuck would he say that? I don't know. Unless he, you know, was just being hopeful and optimistic like a lot of people were. So yeah, I just don't think that it was really going to be like, I do think that the hoops they asked him to jump for while they may not have been, to me, ridiculous, they were enough to let you find, like, if you were biased one way or the other, it was enough to be like, and that's why you shouldn't do it. Or if he doesn't do this, he don't want to play. And you've seen that play out on social media over and over, people calling each other coons and shit about it. The other part of it too is with Cap, like, I told people this, I want to say it has to be 5 years ago now. It was on Balls D Sports. It was a very short article, but it was him being interviewed after he was injured, before he took a knee. So it was him and his comeback to the NFL. It was when he lost all that weight. He went vegan. I don't know if you guys remember this, but he did an interview, and part of the interview, he was like, they were like, what'd you learn from being injured for so long? And he was like, I learned that I don't need football, and I'm who I am outside of football as a person. Like, football, the NFL and this job is not be all end all. And I've taken that shit to heart when he said it. And I legitimately believe that a big part of his power as a symbol and as a man is that he don't need football in the way that a lot of people feel like they need that sport. They need that money. They need that fame, that adulation. He's getting a lot of the fame and shit, even the money, from being a symbol and an icon and an activist.
It ain't played it down in 3 years.
Yeah, so like, you know, you can make I mean he's still rich. It ain't mm-hmm. like we're talking about broke people problems. Mm-hmm. Everybody involved in this is rich as fuck. But it's just interesting because I don't think people want to give any credit, like if you're on one side or the other, you don't want to give any credit to the other side being escalating the conflict, right? This is a great example of conflict versus abuse, where it's like two sides are at conflict, but if you're on one side, the other side is just a abusive asshole, and if you're on the other side, that side's an abusive asshole, right? And that's what I see unfolding online, and the fights between like Stephen A. Smith and Eric Reed and different journalists and shit, it's ridiculous. So I want to bring it back to one thing I think we can all agree on. Colin Kaepernick is good enough to play football at quarterback in the NFL. I think everyone can agree on that. Can we just go back to that? Because I'm telling you right now, there's nuance on both sides of this shit that people don't want to examine.
Mm-mm.
Because it's uncomfortable to be like, right now Stephen A. Smith's a coon. Stephen A. Smith got called coon for 3 years by Eric Reed before he finally snapped off. And I actually went and played his video, read his tweets, because I wanted to know, like, where the fuck is this coming from? You know what I mean? Because I think that shit with Stephen A. Smith, I obviously don't agree with, and there's politics of his that I, you know, any of them niggas that play the talking head on TV game, which he used to do, like go on MSNBC and shit, I can't really fuck with any of them, because by nature of their job, they have to be on TV and be cool with these motherfuckers that I completely abhor. Like, you gotta go on TV and talk to fucking Sean Hannity. Nah, I'm not with it. I get that that's how you make your bread and that's your belief system. I don't know how the fuck you do that, you know. But nobody wants to talk about the shit that Stephen A. Smith said that was right. He said, y'all asking for the league's money and y'all don't want to capitulate at all to them who you're asking for the money. That's true. All of us with jobs know that. You filed your grievance, you won your grievance, you're still coming back to them for money, and you don't want to jump through none of the hoops. That's your right.
Yes, it is.
But at the same time, like, people noticing that and being like, well, you're kind of making it worse, I don't think that make you a coon.
Mm-mm. And you can also point out they have the right not to hire you if you're not willing to abide by their rules.
Right. And, you know, Eric Reed calling this man a coon, using Sambo, step and fetch and shit, that's Twitter meme shit that might seem funny to us because it's not happening to us.
Right.
But how the fuck any self-respecting black person gonna take that for years and years and years and be cool with it?
Right.
You know, I can see how Jason Whitlock or somebody that's written off all black people long ago might do that, but peep game. Y'all notice how other black sports journalists aren't calling Stephen A. Smith out? Like, that work with him and have worked with him at ESPN before. Mm-hmm. Like, he's helped a lot of them people.
Right.
Some of our faves were empowered by that dude. Like.
Right, you don't never know what people do behind the scenes.
Y'all, like, it's easy for us to do that shit when we have no dog in the fight, so we can just be like, you coon ass nigga, you sell out Uncle Tom. Okay, well, it's interesting who's not saying shit, isn't it? Cause some people can legitimately disagree with that. And this is something that has been lost. It's a lost art. I want to blame social media, but maybe it's always been this way. This idea where you can't you can't disagree with somebody and still be like, I feel you, but right. I disagree. I respect you, but I disagree. We have lost that. Now you just a coon.
Right.
Like there's levels to this shit. There are some people who are just, they are not well-meaning, they are evil-intentioned people. They want to see the worst for you. But to me, what you see Stephen A. Smith saying, because he does care about Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reed, and he even says Colin Kaepernick should be in the league, he's like, I'm an older black man giving you some game. If you want to play in this game, you're going to have to give in to some of these unfair rules. On the principle, sure, we all agree on the principle of something's unfair, you should just stand up against it and fuck it, right? He's like, but in reality, if you really do believe that you want to play in this league, you can't show up with the shirt, you can't change the location because you didn't like the waiver. Like, you're gonna have to some extent give deference to the situation, if and understand that it is a special case. Colin doesn't want to do that, you know. I really do feel like that's what the fuck happened. Marlene says, what happened talking offline? Eric Reed has called this man a coon online for three years straight.
That's my thing. And maybe this is just me. I'm gonna tell you right now, you show your ass in public, some people will be like, okay, cool, let's go behind the scenes. But some people go, oh, if we gonna be public, we gonna be public. They have the right. If they choose to, now it's up to them. They have the right to respond back to you on the same platform you showed your ass on. Yeah. They have that right.
Like, it's kind of weird because people do that with me sometimes, where they come at me sideways and be like, why'd you quote tweet me? Why'd you say something about it on your show? Hey, man, if you come at me in public, I might get tired of this shit. I can't be the bigger man every fucking day. So, you know, it's like I'm trying not to tell you about how I feel about the shit. The same way I could be private, you could be private. Right? It's only when I get the upper hand that we pull the, like, wait a minute, shit.
Right.
Especially after I haven't said shit directly to you for a while. Keep in mind, this is not saying everything Stephen A. Smith is right. I'm gonna get back to that.
No, not saying that at all, but that's something I agree with. If we're gonna be public, let's be 100% public.
Right.
Eric Reed should have never did that in a public platform. He should have came.
If he didn't want, well, I don't know that Eric Reed's uncomfortable talking about it in public.
Oh, no.
Just the people saying Stephen A. Smith
should. Right, just for people that are saying that Stephen A. Smith should have said it offline. And I'm not attacking anybody saying that. I'm just saying from my perspective, if you're going to say, well, everything should be kept offline, well, it should have been kept offline from the beginning. You're talking on this public platform where everybody can see, all eyes are there. It's not like we're doing it private. Right. Well, then I have the right to.
Yeah, and then Marlene also says, when will it end? I let you talk about me for 3 years and didn't say shit. So now I'm the bad guy? Like, it could have ended in any point in time in 3 years if you would have left me the fuck alone. Like,
that's my thing.
You know, it kind of hits home with me because this has happened with the podcast before.
I think that's why I took a little personal.
Yeah, where I've tolerated somebody lying on me or talking sideways about me and being like, I'm just, when they go low, we go high, and just try to do that. And then one day when I do clap back, people are like, wow, Rod, I mean, you know, a lot of people get their life to it. They love it because it's entertaining. But then there's also people like, man, y'all think you went too far. You know, you didn't have to do this. You know, and it's like, okay, so where were you at when this shit was escalating? Where were you not? Why weren't you intervening and telling them you went too far? You can tell that man you disagree and not be like, you tap dancing Sambo ass cum.
Yeah, that's kind of harsh.
And let's be frank. Eric Reed is not keeping that same smoke for these white people. Like there's a certain twinge to it when it's a black person that he's adding that extra on there. And this is something that's common with black people in general, but it's extra when it's Jay-Z. It's extra when it's Stephen A. Smith. It's extra with the black folks that he doesn't agree with. When it's Roger Goodell, he ain't calling him out of his name like that. You know, like, it's like, even in your rebelliousness, there's still a deference to whiteness that you're throwing out there. You're not hopping online and talking to Pro Football Talk sideways every day. You know, like, when white people get these opinions you don't agree with, it's just ignored. They get a pass. We just assume, oh, he don't agree, he don't have to single them out. Nah, it's a certain, like, let's recognize all the escalations from both sides. Now, that being said, with Stephen A. Smith, I think he's ridiculous to attack Eric Reed for playing in the NFL. I think that's ridiculous. That's what he does for a living. They filed a workplace grievance. He was allowed to go back to work. His teammate, in the grievance was not. Why the fuck wouldn't he be mad? He still agrees that his friend should be fucking playing. And we all do. So I don't see how that has any fucking bearing on the thing. You know, if you're saying, well, you're so principled, you should not play until he plays, well, they're still trying to go back and get a check from the NFL. Like I said, there's nuance and gray area to this shit. I don't fuck with no one. I don't even discuss this or talk to people who don't deal with gray areas, because you're literally wasting my time. As I don't do it online. I love saving this shit for the podcast, where it's me and you or a guest or the chat room, because there's people that can understand, like, oh, this is not as black and white as I was presented online.
Right. And to go back to what Marlene was saying, baby, I understand you, because from her perspective, she's looking like y'all are just making a shit show, which I from that perspective, I completely understand. Where does it end? I completely understand that point too.
Let me tell you something though. Yesterday I talked about on the feedback show. Remember when I told you about the dude with the list? mm-hmm. who threw the list in the trash. Mm-hmm. There were some people that came up to me afterwards and were like, man, why you had to let him do that? Oh man, you couldn't have just put him on the list and let him just slide up there? You know, he threw the list in the trash. Where was all this when he was acting stupid?
And that's
all I'm saying. Like, I don't like this. I'm gonna show up late and be like, well, it's like both of y'all fighting. Right, because he was hitting me and I hit him back now. Like, I just couldn't let him hit me forever. You know what I'm saying? And so now that we have an altercation, and I'm talking Air Reed, Stephen A. Smith, not right. Kaepernick, NFL. Mm-mm. Now that we have an altercation, that's when the, well, calmer heads need to prevail shit. No, calmer heads need to be prevailing when this nigga was roasting me for 3 years and I was letting him cook for the most part. You know? So, yeah, I think that was kind of, I just felt like that shit with Eric Reed and Stephen A. Smith is a bigger schism, and that's really what a lot of the Kaepernick shit has turned into. It's not about him anymore, and it's definitely not about police violence. Mm-mm. It's about calling somebody a coon or not calling them a coon, and that's it. And like I said, I don't really jive with Stephen A. Smith like this. So this isn't like a defense of like Stephen A. Smith is a man or blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. It's just, in this situation, I don't know that all this shit was called for. You could have just as much disagreed with him and left it at that. Now people are on some like disrespectability politics coon. I'm like, you niggas know you can't show up to the job interview in the Black Lives Matter t-shirt that we all agree is a great t-shirt and we support the message. But you also know if you go to Wachovia, I know they don't exist no more. I'm old.
Come on, first union.
If you go to Bank of America with the fucking Black Lives Matter shirt on instead of a suit, they probably won't hire you. And we can go, that's wrong. And in a just world, they should hire you no matter what. You come in there in the thong. What does that have to do with if you can do the job or not? We know there's a game you play before you even get a chance to play the game. Colin don't want to play that game. That's fine. I respect it and I understand it, and I'm not even fitting to like come down on that man about that. Mm-mm. He don't want to do it. Even if he says I want to play, he wants to play the way he wants to play. You know what I mean? He wants to get in the league being Colin Kaepernick, activist quarterback. That's okay. And if they won't let him do it, then it's just too bad. You know what I mean? Like, he's willing to sacrifice his career to make this point. I really don't think why people have to, I don't get the part where it then becomes about everything except this kind of pissing contest between two entities. And lost in the shuffle, Jay-Z did more for Colin Kaepernick, getting him that fucking tryout than anyone has done for him in the last 3 years. There's nobody that was getting him a look from the NFL, period, from the outside. No amount of tweets, no amount of hashtags, no amount of other players advocating for him. The real tea is Jay-Z's pressure on the NFL from the inside got Colin Kaepernick the look, and Colin Kaepernick decided to do what he wanted to do because he didn't appreciate the quality of the look. But I mean, more than one thing is being true at the same time here, and people can't handle that.
That's true too. But and also, I do think it's human nature for people to, you know, see the back and forth. And because, like I said, that is the social part of social media, just interjecting and saying or applying how they would respond to it and things like that, when you just have to kind of let it play out, as wild as that may sound, and just be like, okay, from what I know now, this is how I feel.
Yeah, like I said, when I seen him outside the shirt, I said, okay, so he doesn't want it that bad, right? And that's fine. Like, He got money. He got, like, he can do whatever. Oh, you know what else I found out too, though? So, you know that T.I. podcast? The one where they was laughing and they took the episode down because he said that shit about his daughter's hymen?
Mm-hmm.
Colin Kaepernick's girlfriend was one of the co-hosts of that show. So she was one of the people laughing and they took it down.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Would have never fucking known, because we have agendas around the people that we fucking with right now.
I didn't know that.
And so even with the one-star reviews and shit, it wasn't like, and this is who Colin Kaepernick is dating or any of that shit, you know.
I didn't hear that at the time. I didn't even know.
You never see anybody bring up the fact he's dating a non-black woman type shit. Like, it's like, we protect the people we fuck with. The people we don't fuck with, we shit on. That's Twitter in a nutshell for you. like, there's no agenda against her right now. Mm-mm. So that shit didn't come up. But the woke niggas that, you know, particularly don't like non-black people commenting on black girls' bodies and shit and all that, them motherfuckers wasn't nowhere to be found when this shit was popping off last week. A friend told me that, and I was like, are you sure?
Because that normally would have been the number one thing. If people had agendas, that would have been the number one thing brought up.
Yeah, so I can't keep up with all these moving ass agendas. I just don't. The only thing I took from this workout is I feel exactly how I feel before, and yeah. I don't think neither one of these motherfuckers really want to work together. Not the NFL, not Kaepernick, yeah. None of it.
Because truth be told, and no, it might sound wild, it actually benefits both parties, you know, to an extent. It benefits the owners because the owners like, good, we don't have to deal with them. And it benefits Colin Kaepernick because we could continue to not say nothing and people throw money at him and he could continue to be the face of shit and people continue to pay him.
Yeah, well, also, I mean, people talked about Jay-Z playing himself for the NFL. I think he, if anything, it's not like he played himself to get Kaepernick a shot, which is even funnier now. Look, I'm willing to laugh about these things.
Come on.
I can't be serious about this shit too much. You have to check out at some point, but it's even funnier if you think about it, because Jay fucking played himself to help the dude without really consulting him. And it sounds like if he would have consulted Cap, the real truth is Cap don't want help because he don't necessarily want to be back in the league on their terms. So all this, I'm gonna get you the shot that they wouldn't give you. I'm gonna get you. Then you gonna show them you could play, and then they gonna get you a job. That shit is done. And then the funniest part is gonna be like, if he does get a job after all this bullshit, people still gonna find a way that it's Jay-Z's fault. Like agendas are that strong.
Agendas, and they don't like that nigga.
That shit's strong as fuck, man. But yeah, good luck to Cap.
Beautiful gowns.
Yeah, Jay-Z held his charity gala last night. Beyonce was looking great.
Come on.
Nobody talked about it because, you know, he's currently a coon. So we can't talk about, you know, the kids he's sending to school and shit because they don't fit the narrative of him, you know, being a sellout.
Yeah, and I followed Beyonce on Instagram, and honey, she was everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We stand a capitalist. Okay.
Come on. Show do.
But yeah, man, I think if Eric Reed really is down with Cap, he would let Kaepernick wear his jersey to sneak into the Panthers facility, and then Kaepernick could tie up Kyle Allen, the quarterback, and then go out and play in Kyle Allen's jersey as quarterback, and then at the end of the game he reveals it's been Kaepernick the whole time and y'all didn't even notice because he's an NFL quality quarterback. Okay, he could play that game. That's the saddest part of all this shit. He clearly belongs on the fucking field. Everything else about it is a distraction. Even if you disagree with his quote unquote politics, it doesn't change that he fucking belongs on the field in an NFL uniform. He's better than so many people. It's so sad what this shit has turned into. Like, we can tolerate fucking people beating kids and women and rapists and murderers and DUIs and drug addicts and people that do performance enhancing drugs and we can do everything except this one time when the nigga is just like, what about all these black people getting killed? That's the one. Fuck, man.
That's how America works. We don't give a fuck what you talk about, but don't be talking about letting nobody set nobody free. Yeah. What?
God,
you
damn.
Got to go.
Like, I always
giving them rights. Mm-mm.
I always go back to what I told Justin in year one of this shit, where I was like, the only problem Kaepernick really gonna have is that the NFL can't do shit about it if they wanted to. They can't stop the police violence. They couldn't even stop domestic violence within the league.
Come on.
This all comes back to Roger Goodell. That nigga overpromised the fuck out of that position.
Yes, he did.
When he got that job, he said he was gonna be the new sheriff. He was gonna clean up all the player behavior shit. And so that made it look like he was the fucking principal of the school. You can't be principal of a bunch of grown ass rich niggas. You can't be. And people are human, so they're gonna make mistakes. Some of them gonna be criminals, some of them not. Do y'all know that the NFL as an organization and their players in general have a much lower crime rate than the fucking like general public? Does everybody know this? Mm-mm. They're below in DUIs, domestic violence, sexual, all the shit that you would think, like when we think of the NFL and we think of these motherfuckers got a problem, they're all below you and your coworker at your job, all of them. every category. It's just their shit becomes stories. And I think low key, high key, whatever, what's lost in the shuffle here is the prevalent racism of America.
Come on.
That is jealous of these black men who make quote unquote too much money to play a game. And this shit started over a decade ago when Goodell got that job, because it was, I want a white man to come in and clean up black behavior. You got Ray Lewis and then you got this in this. So all of a sudden it became like, if we scare and penalize these black men, unlike we do in other sports, because at the time they weren't doing that in other sports, if we penalize them, they'll stop. They'll stop being criminals. They'll stop. They won't get DUIs anymore. Because now they're losing game checks. Nothing's changed. Because people that do stuff like get DUIs normally have actual problems that lead to them over medicating with alcohol. People right. that have domestic violence issues typically have come from a long history of domestic violence and have seen it themselves, and that cycle needs to be broken, not because you didn't get to play a game, but by some actual intervention, you know? And not when the fucking criminal justice system and the police can't do anything in real life to stop Joe, your coworker, from killing his wife.
Right.
The odds of them stopping these rich athletes, these rich famous men, is even lower than that. So when you do have one that is a quote unquote bad egg, you're probably not going to be able to scare them with football out of doing it. We know people that go shoot up places and then kill themselves. Well, how do you stop that? This what, can we give them the death penalty? Like the fear of incarceration and punishment is already much lower for rich people, because they're more likely not going to do it.
Right.
And the fear of losing a fucking game check is not going to necessarily make someone who loses control when in a rage be a better person, quote unquote. Well, I normally would hit my wife and give a damn to the consequences, but I don't want to miss that St. Louis game. That's not the process going through these people's head. They need actual therapy, help, and intervention and pre-intervention. Right? But we don't want to talk about that. That's not as convenient as saying, don't let him play for four games. I don't want to see him anymore. That'll solve it. And Roger Goodell's the guy who sold that to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It was not always like that in major sports. David Stern before him a bit with the drugs in the NBA that he tried to clean up. But this is different, man. So I think people need to stop worrying about the punishment and start worrying about how do you prevent this shit. You know, Josh Gordon being kicked off of 17 teams because he can't stay off of drugs. That's not a, if he loses a game check, he'll fucking stop doing drugs. He has a drug addiction problem. Like, but that's not as convenient. We can't talk about that on Sunday morning football recap shows.
Come on.
So.
Because all of a sudden we have to have compassion.
Yeah, so a lot of this shit was just mad. This is a big ass mess. It's a big ass mess.
What it is.
I don't really feel sorry for anybody involved except a bit for Kaepernick, because I just feel like even if you disagree with his, to me, very basic, humane point of view, he still should be on a team. Because there are people that call people nigger and are on a fucking NFL team. Come on, man. What the fuck is there can be no argument against this man. Even if you think he shouldn't have wore that shirt, there is no argument that I will hear against this man being on the team. He should just be on the team. Just be on the team and boo him. Like, what's up with that? And I feel like they disrespected the troops. Okay, well, he's here. You can boo him now. Like, the fuck? I'm not trying to make everyone agree with me. I understand this is America. You don't have to like the dude. I don't like several people. But if they fucking doing their job good, what the fuck am I supposed to say?
Right.
Ugh. All right. Speaking of which, let's keep the disgust going. Because this happened to
me. Well, is this the disgust hour?
Because we talked about this last week, and these niggas asked for him to come back. And now that he's back, now they just using it to tear him down and taking him out of context. Barack Obama.
What happened?
So he spoke at the what was this, second Obama Foundation Summit at the Marriott Marquis Hotel in Chicago, November 19th. And he was talking about a bunch of shit, by the way, but he was talking about some of the like liberal elite people in the Democratic Party that essentially say, listen, America is the most progressive values that we hold, and that's what everybody wants, and if we run on that, we'll win everywhere. That's all everybody wants everywhere. And so he says, we have a field of very accomplished, very serious, and passionate and smart people who have a history of public service. And whoever emerges from the primary process, I will work my tail off to make sure they are the next president. He told a room of a few hundred of the party's biggest donors and top strategists gathered for a conference of the Democracy Alliance Group. The room was populated by Warren-leaning versions of the kind of people Obama knew that have recently been wearing out their loafers, searching for a savior candidate, constantly fretting about electability and seeding the national conversation that has borne the recent late entries of Michael Bloomberg and Deval Patrick into the race. So maybe it was appropriate that it was here, after nearly 3 years of detachment from workaday politics, that Obama signaled for the first time a willingness to try to modulate his party's debate, in this case to a less frantic tenor. To those who get stressed about robust primaries, he added, fully embodying this new, slightly exasperated adult in the room role, I just have to remind you, I had a very robust primary. Mm-hmm. Right, he started from the bottom. Yet Obama's remarks are not only aimed at donors and chatterers, he had a sterner than usual warning for the campaigns too. While over the last year plus he has been sparing and weighing in on individual primary flashpoints, here he cast himself as understanding but concerned emissary who he perceives as political reality. What he perceives as a political reality. This is still a country that is less revolutionary than it is interested in improvement.
Come on.
The average American doesn't think we have to completely tear down the system and remake it. Agreed. And Obama's tearing America's are conservative, not in ideology, but in temperament. Voters, including Democrats, are not driven by the same views that are reflected on certain left-leaning Twitter feeds or the activist wing of our party. And that's the part that people shared on Twitter. Right? Just that sentence. And what, you don't know what the fuck, see, he hates Twitter, he hates people online, he doesn't want us to have left, he's a centrist, he's a, might as well be a conservative. Let me finish the sentence for some of y'all that haven't heard it yet. And that's not a criticism of the activist wing. Their job is to poke and prod and text and inspire and motivate. But the candidate's job, whoever that ends up being, is to get elected. So that's the context of, look, these people have a role, as do the fucking people running for office have a role. The people that are pushing you to the left, they're pushing you to the left for a reason. But there's also this idea of having to win in a country that has about 40 something percent that are completely willing to vote for a conservative Republican, for a racist even. I keep telling people, when we go back to that fucking Donald Trump shit, Hillary Clinton won, I think, by 3 million votes, the popular vote. And everybody goes, well, she should just be president. Popular vote. Give her an electoral college. Absolutely agree with you. Cool. No problem. That's not the reality. But sure, I agree with you. Here's the thing. Are we ignoring that only 3 million less people in the country support Donald Trump? 3 million less people have the same fucking views that voted, had the same fucking views as Donald Trump.
They were able to vote.
Or were comfortable with his views. Do you understand how many fucking people that is? Like, this idea that, you know, it to me is like saying, like, what Donald Trump is doing, we just need that for a liberal people. And I'm like, that might work for 4 years or whatever. You know, if they come in and just kind of run roughshod, and then it'll immediately be overturned by all the people that didn't get energized, because it doesn't matter if you govern better for them. Barack Obama literally had unemployment numbers down, deficit down, all this shit down for these motherfuckers. They didn't care. He was black and he was getting too much of his way. And like, he actually experienced that. Some of these candidates that don't say the perfect thing for Twitter all the time are experiencing the other side of this.
Yes, sir.
We want to treat them like they're just getting, they're like, they should only listen to us, and that's the only people in the room. It's just not true.
Mm-mm.
You can't win without more than just the most liberal people. You either have to convince them to be the most liberal people, which can happen, or you have to kind of at least temper some of your shit to, like, okay, what are you not scared of? What are you willing to at least let me try out to push you towards the thing that we need? That's all Obamacare ended up being. It's not the end all, it's not the be all, it's not the final results. He even goes on to say, he explains that he's been thinking about how the candidates have been talking about him on the trail. I think it is important for candidates to push past where I was able to achieve as a president. I wouldn't run the same campaign today in this environment as I ran in 2008, in part because we made enough progress since 2008, of which I am very proud that it moved what's possible. So I don't want people to just revert to what's safe. I want them to push out and try more, all right? So we got the Affordable Care Act. It was a really good starter home, as I say. Mm-hmm. I don't want people just standing pat because we still have millions of people who are uninsured. I don't take it as a criticism when people say, hey, that's great, Obama did what he did and now we want to do more. I hope so. That's the whole point. I think it is very important to all the candidates who are running at every level to pay some attention to where voters actually are and how they think about their lives. And I don't think we should be deluded into thinking that the resistance to certain approaches to things is simply because voters haven't heard a bold enough proposal. And as soon as they hear a bold proposal, that's going to activate them. Because you know what? It turns out people are cautious because they don't have a margin for error.
Right.
Like, so when you are, like, part of the reason that people feel a little less adventurous is because they don't always have room to be this. A large part of why black people vote pragmatically Democrat is because we have the least amount of fucking room. You know, that's why you get 90-something% of black women forming behind whoever the number one Democrat is at the end of the day, because it's like, I don't actually have room to do shit like, fuck it, vote for Bernie, I'm gonna write in fucking Jill Stein, just let the world burn, Trump will be okay. We don't actually have a room to play with you.
Can't play them games, dawg. People die.
And so it's like, people want to, and this is one of the reasons I can't really fuck with a lot of the internet activism shit. They want to be catered to the most. They want to control all the narrative, and they want their way or the highway. But then they want no responsibility when you're like, yo, so the last election, that went pretty bad. Ain't had shit to do with me. Candidate's fault, everybody but me. But you just said that if we don't do everything your way, you're not gonna vote. Yep, but if we lose, that's still on y'all. What?
That's how they do.
Like, how, where's the fucking responsibility? Where's the accountability? Hey, I know I said it didn't matter if she won or lost, Trump's the same as her, and two sides of the same coin, and I'm voting Jill Stein. That's really all y'all fault. If you think about it, it's nothing to do with me. I know I use my platform to tell everybody, you know, not to vote, but it's really you guys that fucked that one up. Like, you can't fuck with them because they have no responsibility, no accountability. You come back to them and they're just, and then you see when I fucking read this shit in context. Did you have a problem with what he said?
No. What he said is 100% correct, because most voters, even most black people, go, the system is fucked up. And most black people, even if you want to abolish slavery, and I mean, not abolish slavery, but well, it is slavery, but abolish, you know, prisons and all that shit. Even if you want to do that, you go, okay, as of right now, we can't just tear the whole system down and say, fuck it. Like, I just want small adjustments. I just want to be able to walk out my house and not be stopped and frisked. I just want to be able to walk out my house and the police officer not shoot me. I want the bare minimum. You know, I'm not that radical where I'm like, just fuck the whole system. Yes, I want the system to change. Do I want the system to be, you know, revamped and evolved? Yes, but being realistic, that's most people. Like,
and you know what's funny? I saw this one activist being like, I noticed when I be talking shit about Obama, I don't get as much pushback now. Nigga, you've been doing it for 8 years. We just understand you're never going to put the man in context.
Right.
And we're done fucking talking to you about it. You got it. You won. Like, the only people that fuck with you now will be only the people that agree with you and retweet you. And if that's how you want it, fine. If that feels like progress to you, good for you. But there's a vast majority of fucking people that are like, not vast majority. The ones of us who go and read, instead of just taking somebody's word for it, or taking like half a clip that you refuse to show the rest of it to over and over and over again. We just were here last week. The ones of us who go and read are like, oh, you're doing this on purpose and I can't talk to you. The same way that, that's like Bill O'Reilly being like, I notice less pushback when I say Donald Trump is the man. Yeah, we're done with you, bruh. You made your point. Like, nothing's ever gonna change for you. You're gonna be saying this shit in 20 years. We're cool.
And you know what? You know what I hear when they say that? I'm not going viral no more. You know what I hear when they say that? People aren't interacting with me. I'm not getting the same outrage. You know, that's what I hear when they say that. So basically, they're saying like, oh, I need to change my tactic. I guarantee you a lot of these people will have another tactic eventually, or they're going to keep pounding. Like, it's like throwing shit at the wall. Some eventually will stick to cause people to come my way so I can get this social part of social media. Because that's what I hear when people say shit like that. Nobody argue with me? No, bitch. Don't nobody want to argue with you all goddamn day.
Yeah, this racism shit has... It's weird because it really activated black people politically in some ways that I think they need to be examined. Some of the long-term effects of having a black president, it wasn't all good. And I don't mean that in his policies. I mean that in the words we put in his mouth versus what he says. And then the ways that we get disappointed in him for not being the activist in chief as opposed to delivering the promises that he said he had. Like, there's still black people that I see all the time that bring up shit that literally he never said he would do.
Mm-mm, he never promised.
And also bring up shit that we did things to help and they don't acknowledge them because it's not like there's a block in their mind of when I think black, I'm thinking Fred Hampton ran for president. And it's like, nah, you know, he did commute the second most sentences ever. And then it's like, well, that ain't for black people. Well, it was black people that got out of prison to tell their families that.
Come on, tell their loved ones that.
We the same people mad about over incarceration, but we don't count that. You know, we don't count when black employment numbers went up, even if they didn't go up enough or the same as white people. We still don't count that.
But they went up, my nigga.
We got a way about us. And I think it's, I don't know if it's contrarianism or just that we're so, I don't know, so hurt and disillusioned and fairly so because of this country that even when we see something that's obviously not what we're saying it is, we'll still go out there on a limb. And then also, real talk, and this isn't to be offensive, but some people are gonna be mad, a lot of these niggas weren't really politically into shit until Obama.
Politically astute. Yeah, they didn't know how the system runs. Like the emergence, you can tell.
Yeah, a lot, the emergence of like the Tea Party and shit activated a lot of people. The emergence of Black Lives Matter activated a lot of people. And you can tell they just don't have a lot of historical context, or it's all theory to them, or they're coming down out of the mountains of whiteness to dictate to niggas what we need to be thinking. And you can tell by their commentary on us and how, you know, even the way that a lot of people felt they needed to be a quote unquote leader in a leader position and tell us how to vote and how to think, like even that shit is ridiculous. You know what I mean? Like, I get to tell y'all, I'm now the activist that tells black people how to vote. Like, nigga, where the fuck you been? Who are you? Like, you just
who
got here.
Who are you?
Some of y'all used to like be white. You know what I mean? Like, some people used to like not be bothered with this shit. Like, everybody can see it. Everyone has a digital history on the internet now. Like, just be honest and be authentic and be real and stop coming in trying to fucking dictate to everybody, you know? And shit like this, man, I feel sorry because I watch the people, because, you know, that bias shit, I watch the people that retweet the folks that are taking this shit out of context, because they and it saddens me, because I'm like, oh, you're not a person I can really respect.
Mm-mm.
Like, you don't read and you don't care for the truth, and you're not coming from a genuine place. That's sad, you know. All right,
that's what I'm saying. And it's somewhat aggravating and it's somewhat frustrating. And then a lot of them wonder, back to my other point, why they're dismissed and why people don't take them seriously and why people don't interact with them, because you're actually not starting from a place where we're both, and it's not that everybody has to be educated about everything, I'm not saying that, but you need to at least be able to, if you don't know, listen to somebody that actually knows their shit. And people just go, well, fuck it, this is I've heard this.
Here's the thing, a lot of them don't have true genuine respect for other black people.
Agreed.
They like, and I'm talking about people that run around with the label of Black Lives Matter on their chest and all that shit. A lot of them still see themselves as better than the other black people, and that's a big fucking problem. It's the reason that people can go online and talk shit about Joe Biden, but them fucking poll numbers keep coming back and black people voting for him. Online, if online was real, Joe Biden would be last in the fucking polls. Yes, below everybody.
Right.
But the fact that we don't respect that the people that vote for him is why people like him win. It's because you didn't even feel the need to change those people's minds. You just mocked and admonished those people, being black people, your fellow people that you claim to respect, that aren't stupid, that vote pragmatically. For some fucking reason, you don't respect them enough to go get their opinion.
Right. You don't respect their opinion. Ask why. And not to go on a tangent, but this is one thing that really irritates me about our voting process here in America. And I understand this is white supremacy. Nobody ever asks niggas why they vote. You know what we did? We get a bunch of white people in the middle of 10 buck fucking two goddamn nowhere, putting a fucking camera in their face and asking them about bullshit don't nobody goddamn care about. Why don't you ask the niggas in the inner city, what do you think? How do you feel? Let's hear what you got to say about this shit. How is this impacting you? And you know, is your economy better? You know what? Every time I turn around, I see these white fucking farmers. You know, it's black farmers too. I don't ever see y'all talk to these goddamn black farmers that are struggling and losing their farms. And companies taking their shit. I don't never hear you see that. You know, I see the single white mother come on with tears in her eyes talking about how she lost her health care. Why don't you do black women like that? Why don't you talk to a black single mama who lost her health care and can't afford shit? You know, you see the white people losing their shit. And that's one thing that really, really frustrates me. We don't never see nobody brown. And I think that's one thing that frustrates me about this system and shit like that. And I do care and I do have a heart and I do understand why white people are mad about shit. I do. But one thing that fucking irritates me, I don't give a fuck about these people. That's not gonna fucking matter when election time comes. They're not gonna matter. You're putting the same people in our faces over and over. I'm undivided. I'm undecided. Bitch, I don't care about your undecided white ass in the middle of nowhere. Let me talk to people that, cause you know what black people normally are? Undecided. We fucking know who we gonna goddamn vote for. It's not 3 days before the election and we hemming and hawing about, I don't know who the fuck I'm gonna vote for. It's life and death. We will die. Our family members will die. Our loved ones will die. They will get fucking deported. What the fuck are we talking about here? I'm sorry. That just frustrates me.
No, you don't have to apologize. And the other thing too is, for people to be shitting on Obama, guess what Obama did that all these activists claim they want these new candidates to do? He ran a young people's door-to-door campaign. He had the best groundwork. People still trying to do the groundwork that he did. I can't even replicate it. All these candidates still struggling to do what he did. He got actual people on the ground fucking involved. He got young people involved. He got black people involved. He was the man with the least name recognition in his election. So you can't fucking dismiss that because it's not convenient to you anymore. Because you're disillusioned now. Like, get the fuck out of here. You're going to set yourself up again looking for another magical candidate that makes you tingle, as opposed to who the fuck can beat Trump, who the fuck can win. That's it.
Yeah.
And then the other thing too is, a lot of these and this is with everyone with a platform online, this is not just activists or not, but when you are an activist, your world does become disillusioned, because if you're online with most of the shit you do, if you're that kind of person, you're not out here in other people's opposition's face all the time, you're gonna end up surrounded by people that fucking uplift and support and retweet and all that shit. All of us have it. I'm not even an activist. Most of the people that fuck with me online completely fucking agree with you, because people are like, it's like Netflix. They're picking the shows they want to watch when they hit the follow button. They want to watch your show. They want to agree with your shit. They want to support what you do. So then you start, it goes to your head eventually where you're like, everything I fucking say is magical. Everything I say is the truth. Everyone always agrees with me. I'm always right. There is no other point of view. Right? It's easy. And if you don't like something, you block it. You disengage from it. You get that kind of shit. Right? Meanwhile, in real fucking life, the way that it seems to have been working for fucking years is the investment you put in candidates is the fucking shit you get out. You can't get leverage with nothing at stake. And it's easier online to put nothing at stake and ask for all the leverage. It's just, you know, it's just the way that the system is set up. And I think we're learning a lot in a very short period of time about the reaches of online. The fact that black face bots have been organized around the election, mm-hmm. around NFL discussions, around Kaepernick, it should be bothering people.
Right.
The fact that many of y'all, quote unquote, were fucking influenced by these fucking fake arguments from robots. The fact that they found fake activist accounts in the aftermath of 2016 and said, Black Lives Matter for this and that was fucking made out of Russia. It was ran by a white guy in Ohio. Like, the fact that people haven't stopped and went, I should stop rushing in headlong when I see something that keeps retweeting things I agree with and just going, well, that's on the up and up. Like, maybe consider it. Not everything is going to go your way. Some shit is going to be inconvenient. You know, like, I respect and honestly, I trust and respect candidates and policies and people who I don't always agree with. Cause that's real. 100% agreement ain't real. You know, some of the biggest, like, quote unquote, betrayals of my adult life have come from people that approach me with, I agree with everything. You the fucking greatest. Oh, I'll suck your dick today. And then it, by the end, you're like, this motherfucker hates me. Right, because it's not real that everyone agrees on everything. Mm-mm. Like, you don't gotta troll you. They don't have to, like, disrespect you or disagree on everything either. They don't need a contrarian friend. Fuck you, too. But, nigga, like, it's okay to be like, these are a list of fucking pertinent issues in the world where you're trying to govern how 400 million people, wherever the fuck is in America, when there's probably gonna be some shit on your list of every issue affecting every American that I go, well, I wish you would be a little bit more to the left on that. I think you should be a little more conservative on that one. I wish, because I as an individual have my own life experience and I want different things. And I don't expect the rest of the world to fucking get it. Mm-mm. Not everyone's gonna agree with me. I can't, not even your own fucking family agrees on everything. And so at the end of the day, the reality is the people outside of the fucking matrix of Twitter and shit have to govern for everybody. And there has to be some deference paid to everybody, whether you like it or not. Because when you don't, you end up with the shit we got now. Well, this is what it look like when somebody goes, fuck half the country or whatever.
Come on.
It's never gonna look that way the other way. You know? Even the shit that people think, well, this is what I want from a left-leaning government. White people gonna get that too. As long as there's racial, privilege in America, white people will come out better under liberal candidates too. Like, we gonna get fucked one way or the other. You know, I'm just trying not to get fucked as hard.
Right. It's like, oh, this, you know, you might have, I'm just throwing a number out there. Instead of quote unquote 30% of brown people without insurance, now we have 5% or 10%. Which means we still have a percentage of people without it, but at least the fucking number ain't as high. That's all right. It is for us. We just want the numbers to go down.
Listen, Karen, it doesn't matter how it's paid for. We need 100% free healthcare today, tomorrow, whatever. Right? That's it.
You let them tell the story, yes.
I just see a bunch of people setting themselves up to be exactly what happened under Obama, where they say...
Disappointed again.
Because I think it's actually kind of worse what candidates are doing now, where they're promising shit, and it's like... Not 1,000% sure that math adds up, but I do like the idea of the things you're proposing. And then when they get in office and it's a little tougher than they said, will we get 2010? Because what people forget about Obama is 2010, when people went, wasn't as easy as we thought it would be, and you got it right, and they just like, I ain't voting no more.
I ain't voting for midterm elections. I'm not voting your governors and your senators back in office. I'm not voting your congressmen.
And the electorate holds no responsibility in that. The individual voter holds no responsibility in that. People that voted in 2008 and not 2010, hey, that's everybody else's fault, not mine. Right? Like, it's, I don't know. Can't fuck with these niggas. Anyway, what else happened? You know, in fact, let's keep it going. So that might be a long show.
Let's do it.
Bots in blackface, the rise of fake black people on social media promoting political agendas. If you follow Donald Trump's Twitter feed, you may have noticed several prominent accounts that appear to be profiles belonging to black people high up on his Twitter feed of responses. Some of these accounts have thousands and thousands of followers. Others even have a blue check mark next to their account names. Yet, exactly who is behind these accounts is ambiguous. The rise of bots in the guise of black people on social media remains a worrisome issue heading into the 2020 elections.
And so, like I said, I gotta say this. I personally think the way we do our system here, and I never realized it till now. It's too fucking long. It's too goddamn long. It's too long. 2 years to 3 years is too fucking long. Get this. I don't mind you doing this shit, but let's shorten this period of time. Because before you could do this, but with social media, let's cut this shit down. Let's wrap it up. We shouldn't be doing this for 5 years and then we go, okay, now let's vote after we have worn the populace out and they've been fighting and falling out with each other. But that's just my opinion. And shit like that frustrates me.
Yeah, I'm with Obama on this. I actually don't care about this part. Like, whatever the primary period is, if y'all want to run for 2 years, cool. I want the best person to win. If it takes 2 years to find the best person, I'm down with that. I don't want to have to rush into nothing. Matter of fact, I'm definitely don't want to rush into picking the next person to be president of the United States. I would definitely like to see them vetted. What it is that these arguments online aren't sustainable.
Okay, and I think that's what wears me out. Well, I'm like, yeah, fuck it. Like this is too much.
Yeah, it's not sustainable. If y'all have noticed, I haven't really talked about it on the show or online about individual candidates as much versus any of them, because even when I criticize one, I always come back to the same thing at the end of every single time. I would vote for them if they win.
Agreed.
There's like two or three of them that I wouldn't vote for, and you know what I do? I don't talk about them on this show because fuck them. Even the ones that I'm like, god damn, this nigga is wild, I still come to the end where I'm like, I mean, it's him versus Trump, you got it. If it's him versus Pence, if it's him versus any Republican, you got it, brother. Good work, good luck. You know what I mean? Amy Klobuchar, I heard you real mean to people behind closed doors. That's terrible, but absolutely vote for you. Donald Trump's mean to people in front and behind closed doors.
Right, all around.
You know, like, I don't know what to tell you, man. If y'all can't get it, then cool. But what happens is that we're rewarded for arguing online.
All right.
The dopamine fix we get from, let me make a 12-point thread about Cop Marla Harris and
don't nobody give a fuck, and most people not gonna read. I'm but with your feelings.
Even if they do read it or retweet it, though, I'm just saying the point is you get dopamine hit.
Agreed.
Like, because a lot of people do retweet those things. Because what they
no not retweet. Most people don't read. Like, they're not.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. But still, most of them, it's the interaction. The interaction is the retweet.
Okay. Yes. I'm with you on that.
Whether you fucking read it or not. My high comes from that number going up.
Okay, I'm with you on that one. Yeah. I'm with you on that one. I was like, y'all doing this, and I'm like, I'm looking like half the people not gonna read this.
I finally saw maybe 2-3 weeks ago, I didn't share it, but I finally saw somebody that actually went and broke down where a lot of the Kamala Harris Cop Mala shit had come from a white woman that's a Bernie supporter who started all that shit. And she like worked for I forget what paper it was that did the first like hit piece on her. She worked for that. And it's like, yeah, so a lot of black people have been parodying that talk from that white woman, you know, and made a whole life out of it, made a whole podcast, whole Twitter feeds, everything is about this woman being a cop. And you know who else is on there? Bunch of fake black face ass niggas too, bunch of bots. Like, the shit online is just not a real semblance of what's happening in real life necessarily. Take for instance Twitter account Ryan Hill MI, aka Ryan Hill. This account has a blue check mark, which supposedly means it was vetted by Twitter and confirmed to be an actual person. Yet a Google or Bing search for Ryan Hill Michigan only yields a research of a white male lawyer in Michigan and nothing about a young black man in the Michigan area, which is what his avatar depicts. I reached out to Ryan Hill account on Twitter. I asked him about it. Doing an interview and provided some background information. The conversation turned bizarre, as you can see from the below screenshot. These remarks to my inquiries. Good luck with that. Nah, journalism, at least in my experience, is typically predicated on legitimate sourcing and actual facts, not specious, and that is a generous characterization, rumor, and fantasy. Other than a film, an unequivocally denial of your garbage premise, I have no further comment. Lady, please get a life and stop spreading unfounded nonsense about me. One, I am real. Two, I am black. 55% SSA per my 23 and me. I guess South African or something. Three, I'm not interested in granting you an interview. Four, I get quite a few death threats and I'm not interested in making it easier for people to ask me, to attack me / fam. I also contacted Twitter and asked the company about assigning a blue check mark as an account to a journalist. And the journalist could not find much information about. I was told I would receive an answer and I'm still waiting. Needless to say, the account raises some suspicion about authenticity. If it is indeed some sock puppet account posing as a black person to influence politics, it wouldn't be the first time some vested interest engaged in blackface. Perceptive social media users have even unearthed fake black accounts using Google's reverse image search feature. One such Twitter account at Mike47414781 was proven, the number didn't give it away?
Right!
It was proven to be
Did it have an egg too?
No, it's a black person's face. That's why all these accounts have black people's faces.
Oh yeah, my joke is like, with all them numbers, did you click on and it was an egg too?
Yeah, right. But yeah, it turned out to be a stock image as the account's avatar. A stock image. They're just Googling black person.
And just saying copy. All right, that's the one I'll take, paste.
76 best husband material images in 2019.
Oh, I guess they ain't even smart enough to go to page two. They picking them on the first page.
129 best cool beard images 2019. Black men, black boys. 792 best gorgeous men images in 2019. Fine men, gorgeous black. I love how they wanted to make sure it was an attractive black man. They're like, that's how we gonna get the black women vote, y'all. We gonna get thirst
gotta make
traps.
Them sexy.
Thirst trap them in the MAGA real quick.
Gotta get them Instagram model ready.
Shireen Mitchell is the founder of Digital Sisters and Stop Online Violence Against Women, and as she's done in-depth research about the use of imposter black accounts pushing political agendas across social media. Mitchell says the activity behind these fake accounts boils down to getting people not to vote for Democrats. She points out that the social media is the ultimate affordable platform for white supremacists. This is the same place that y'all want Barack Obama to fucking praise and worship. Get the fuck out of here. Y'all be on Twitter talking about how it's garbage. And then when he's like, yeah, it's a little bit fucked up, man. Not everybody on there is who they say they are. And not everything is a real reflection of real life. Some of these, like, people that are pushing some of this shit are not on the up and up. Wow, he just hates activism and black people and shit. You know, what a coon. I tell you. Probably don't want Kaepernick to get a job, if you ask me. As one of the authors of Stop Online Violence Against Women's report on targeted black voter suppression on social media, Mitchell and her team reported on the Russian Internet Research Agency's purposeful political ad targeting to black Americans. The 3,500 ads on Facebook by the Russian Internet Research Agency were centered largely on black American culture over all other identity and race-based narratives. While the race-based focus on the Russian purchase ads has been acknowledged in some reporting and previous studies, it has not been pointed out in the media that the theme of black identity and culture were the focus of the majority of the ads, with the intent to engage in voter suppression of black voters. And I'm gonna go up to the line and stop, but there are niggas who came at me, your boy, for being like, this is fake. Don't listen to people that tell you as a black person not to vote, and it's okay to put your feelings about it first. Don't listen to them. They are sabotaging us. Those motherfuckers, some of them came from my neck. Nigga, you were led around by Russian bots. Don't talk to me about shit in no election. Not 2019, not beyond. I don't give a fuck who you vote for from now on. How the fuck you get fooled by some Russians? And I'm the one that's wrong? I shouldn't be talking about it on my platform? Are you crazy? Which one of us was stupid enough to get failed by some fucking robots? What? That's crazy to me. Like, now you have the fucking research done by a black woman to tell you what I fucking told you when I was looking at fucking Dos comrades telling us not to vote. I was like, that shit is ridiculous. Wow, so you shaming black people into voting? No, I'm saying these people aren't real black people.
Right, because no black person would talk like that.
And your dumb ass is falling for it. Hook, line, and sinker. God damn. Motherfuckers, man. Sorry, I'm still mad about that shit. And to see these people crawling back in 2019, just in time to get involved in 2020.
After being quiet for years.
Man, absolutely fuck you from the bottom of my soul. That is ridiculous. No apologies. No, I was complicit in this. Oh, you know what? Now it's just, oh, God, guys, this time around is going to be different. How? Lucy with the football? How is it going to be different? You fell for the shit. Not the rest of the black people that got their ass out and voted. Anybody you convinced to stay home, you are responsible for that shit. The same way I feel about white people that say it's okay to stay out. You don't get a pass for being black and doing that. It's still stupid. It's just you did it. You listened to the white people that told you it was okay to say that shit. If you can vote, you should vote
if you can.
If you black, yes, people did die for you to vote, and there's nothing to be ashamed about. I don't feel ashamed about that.
Mm-mm.
If you feel some shame about it, examine yourself. Why are you so ashamed that somebody died for your right to vote? I feel empowered by that. I love it. Love the smell of a good library on a Tuesday. Fuck that shit. Can't wait to hop up in some local school and pull the lever first thing in the morning. Be mad when I'm late. Fuck out of here.
We'll be on time next time. I'm sorry. We try to aim for number one and number two.
Ridiculous people. All right. Yeah. The report found that Russian actors specifically manipulated topics such as Hillary Clinton's super predator comment.
But that shit did not make no sense.
Your favorite activist still on Twitter talking that shit. An issue related to race and policing, immigration, and guns. You can read the entire report here. Much of the controversy over fake black social media accounts also surrounds the ADOS movement, American Descendants of Slavery. ADOS activists claim the people that told y'all not to see Hillary and your other favorite activists fell for that shit too, hook, line, and sinker. Niggas is being led by Russian bots. And I can't talk about it? I'm talking about it. The fuck is wrong with these people? Stop telling me what to do. You getting told what to do by our fucking the Soviet Union and shit. ADOS activists claim that African-American voters should vote for politicians that support policies beneficial and exclusive to African-American communities such as reparations. Meanwhile, that's your hotel kings and shit over there, your leaders being led by Russian bots. Right. I'm sure they have all of our best interests in mind over in Russia. They're just trying to help us out. BuzzFeed reported that social media ADOS activist accounts are often accused of being bots and Russian trolls. Some Twitter users still doubt the authenticity of some of the accounts tweeting about the movement. One user account questioned if she had to mute the ADOS and posted a screenshot of an account created in 2009. This might be important, the user said. I saw a warning the other day that the new bot movement is old accounts that have been dormant. This account was created in 2009 but just started tweeting literally 15 minutes ago.
What?
Mm-hmm. Russia been on it. Certainly there are concerted efforts to splinter the powerful black voting bloc and to keep black people from voting. It's important that black people stay vigilant over whose information to trust on social media. One professor offered a few tips on NPR. Beware of accounts that regularly use stereotypical quote unquote black language. These accounts typically use language they think black people use. Two, check the number of tweets and followers on an account. Check how long ago an account was created and check the type of tweets or posts the account has on its timeline. Let me tell you something. These niggas not gonna do that, because if you agree with the three words out of the first sentence of the fucking tweet, you're retweeting and you're not looking back.
Yeah, most people don't.
I've seen bots start entire fucking conflicts, and they get involved now on anything involving race. Kaepernick, Harriet movie. And it's funny because when you see people that get a pass that slide through, it's always like, to me as a black person, I always notice. Yesterday I seen a video of Daya Kaluuya and the dude that plays Franklin on Snowfall dapping each other up, and I said, where's ADOS?
That was adorable.
It was beautiful. But where was ADOS? Ain't they supposed to be mad? Look at them taking them black roads. Man, you don't give a fuck about that shit, dog, because it's not real. Idiots, man. Oh, these niggas.
Yeah, and somebody said ADOS, that don't sound like nothing cool to black people make up anyway. Y'all know ours would be a lot cooler than that. ADOS,
right?
You actually pronouncing every letter. Y'all know we don't pronounce every letters. We always take shortcuts.
Right. We at least be calling it ADOS or some shit.
Come on, ADOS.
ADOS. All right, we gotta go to the next session. Give me a second. All right, we're in the next session. Sorry, guys. This is kind of an angry episode, but all this shit kind of pissed me off. The Kaepernick shit's just annoying because it was a chance where it could have been something and it ended up basically being nothing. And that just sucks for everybody involved, because now everybody gotta be a coon. The Obama shit is just that's annoying, because we literally did this last week.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I see that this is gonna be a thing for all these,
every time they say something,
wokes TM to do this shit every time it comes up. It's gonna, and then it spreads throughout the black community, and you gonna have the online digital niggas on their podcast taking it out of context, and it's all that shit all over again. And if you fucking bring up the context of it, then all of a sudden you some type of coon. You know, you hate black people. You the problem. You just love Obama. You know, it's everything except you can read a fucking sentence. Oh, I can read a whole article. Oh, well, you must just love Obama. No, I just love reading the whole article. You know, like how you supposed to do, you know,
listen to the whole clip.
They really be looking like they got caught cheating, like on Love and Hip Hop, when it's like, like when it's like, so the first part of that quote that you put out, that says, you know, America is not as liberal as the most left-leaning Twitter account. Not that that was wrong, but you know, he did say more after that. Wow. You just gonna read the whole quote? Wow.
Right in front of my salad. Yes, right in front
wow.
of my salad.
Wow. Wow, ma, for real? You gonna just play me like that? You don't believe me? When I just give you, say Obama only said 5 words and those are the only ones important? Wow. Wow, I didn't think you would actually look through my phone. Like, nigga, you quit. You're tweeting out the same article that I can just go to the source and see it. God, I hate you. Anyway, definitely not doing fucking with black people today.
Oh, no, everybody got 100.
Yeah. Might do...
Do white people news.
I don't know, because I'm trying to think if I have I might not have got any white people new songs.
Okay.
And that might be a problem, because I think I fell behind on collecting them, and then the only ones left would be the you know, the old school white people news ones, and I don't want to go back.
Woo, Chad, a ghetto.
Yeah. Well, maybe this one. All right, yeah, okay, we try this one. All right, it's just some white people news, everybody. And hopefully it's good. And you know what else sucks about context? I'm glad somebody brought this up in the chat, but you don't get to go off. You know what I mean? You don't really get to go off, because most of the time in context, what people have to say is not inflammatory.
No, it's not.
One way or the other. You know,
most
I was talking
people in the middle.
I was talking to somebody today about just like, I said, you know, when we became friends, it was like when we disagreed, and I said it was a public disagreement, but neither one of us like flexed on the other, called each other out of name, neither one of us played victim. We disagreed and we moved on like friends. We made jokes about the shit not too long afterwards, and even when we revisited the conversation, it grew closer and closer to, because at the end of the day, neither one of us is fucking insane and became a new person in the middle of the argument that suddenly just hated the other person. That's not how real life is supposed to work.
Mm-mm.
It's easier to do that on the internet because we don't really know each other. You can just kind of fucking do that. Like, you think you're talking to somebody that's cool with you, and the next thing you know, it's like, I never liked your ass anyway. It's like, whoa, what the fuck just happened? Well, that's kind of the difference, and I think we've lost that. And there's a way to engage and disagree with somebody and don't have to turn them into a caricature of themselves.
Right.
You can disagree with Barack Obama and not turn him into, you know, he's really just a conservative in blackface and shit. Like, look, you don't have to be that bombastic asshole. You know, you can also be like, I wish he would have pushed further on this. And you know what he says? I should have pushed further on this, or I hope the next person pushes further than I did. What are we even mad about now? He's saying what you're doing is good and he likes it and there's a place for it.
Mm-hmm.
Why you gotta make me mad at him? Cause you mad? Fuck out of here. All right, let's get to the white people news so I can calm down. I don't think I know the white version of this song. First of all, this nigga is playing
four instruments.
Every instrument. He got four cameras on the instruments at the same time. I'm guessing he had to play one through, play the other one through, play, and then it made this composition itself.
Yeah, he playing the drums, the piano,
the bass and the guitar. God damn. When he playing the guitar, you see the bass in the background. Okay. All right. Sorry.
Used to spend my nights out in a barroom, liquor was the only love I've known. But you rescued me from reaching for the bottom and brought me back from being And honey, I stay stoned on your love all the time. I've looked for love in all the same old places. Found the bottom of the bottle's always dry. When you poured out your love, I didn't waste it. Cause there's nothing, nothing like your love to get me high.
Okay.
You're as sweet as strawberry wine. You're as warm as a glass of brandy. And honey, I stay stoned on your love all the time. Oh, you're as smooth as Tennessee.
That was a good one.
I don't even know what the original song sound like. I don't even know if I want to go ahead.
The white version by Chris Stapleton.
Yeah, who was that?
I don't know these white people, Karen.
Used to spend my nights out in the barroom. Liquor was the only love I'd known.
Black version better. Black version had that.
Somebody in the room said, Chris, who? Sorry to this man.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't know him if I seen him walking down the street.
Yeah, I feel so bad. He's probably a great man.
I hate to say it. I hope I don't sound ridiculous. I don't know who this man is. I mean, he could be walking down the street. I wouldn't know a thing. Sorry to this man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to hate. He probably is dope, so don't write in. I know a lot of you special.
No, that was like, you know, he the number one country artist.
I know a lot of you special blacks probably stand for this man. This is not a diss to the white man.
I never
man,
heard that version.
But that black man version sound better to me. I'm sorry.
Ooh, honey. He was hitting all the notes.
All the notes.
He was playing all the instruments too.
All right, let's get into white people news. I'm skipping that y'all's man because I don't feel like talking about Trump.
Oh, we already talked about
feel like
about
y'all him. made myself angry. I picked those articles. Let me take some responsibility, okay? The world made me angry reading these articles that I picked for myself. Ashley Graham, the Latina curvy model,
mm-hmm.
married to a black man, you know, she got her own issues, you know. When she first brought her black man home, he had to deal with racism in her family. So it wasn't just Elon, guys. All right, there's a lot of y'all been in that situation
in one way, shape, form, or fashion or another.
Yeah. As children, we're taught that sexy is dirty, shameful, and unladylike in the eyes of God, but as grown ass fuck women, who wrote this? Oh, Nicole Bitchy, or what? XO Nicole, okay. They must be sassy with it, okay. But as grown as fuck women, we understand that having a healthy sex life is nothing to be ashamed of, especially when you're married. Yeah, it's funny that people say, especially when you're married, because I agree. But that does also concede to those like kind of Judeo-Christian values that marriage,
you love the bitches.
Marriage cleans up the quandaries morally about sex, which look, man, if you fucking people, be free with it. You know, like hope it's your decision, your choice, all that shit. But if you're fucking people and feeling guilty, then you're probably doing it wrong, right? Like you don't want to be feeling bad about enjoying something with someone, you know, like, so. You know, I think a lot, and also I think a lot of times, especially women, think they're gonna get freed from the sexual, like, guilt via marriage and shit.
Yeah.
But it don't always work that way. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you still have hangups. Mm-hmm. And you also have men who take advantage of that, where it's like, I'm giving you the only godly and saintly sex you can have. I'm giving you the only permitted sex, so I'm gonna abuse that privilege. You know, I'm gonna treat you like shit. I'm gonna treat you like you're here for reproduction. I'm gonna not care about your pleasure. I'm gonna not, you know, I'm gonna make sure you owe it to me and shit like that. Like, a lot of religious,
demand it from you.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's a lot of religious hangups around sex that marriage doesn't really clear up, because the underlying problem is the misogyny of religion.
Agreed.
In a recent interview, model Ashley Graham said that sex and faith go hand in hand, says that in her household, prayer is a form of foreplay. The 32-year-old model, who has been married to her husband, Justin Irvine, for nearly a decade. It looks like Justine Irvine, for nearly a decade, is currently expecting her first child and says that her marriage has never been stronger.
She's gorgeous in this picture.
She's gorgeous in all her pictures. That's a good-looking woman. According to Ashley, the key to keeping the fire lit in their union over the past 9 years has been their connection with God. In a recent interview with Lily Singh, she said, "My husband, Justin," oh, so now it's Justin. So maybe that was a typo earlier. "My husband, Justin."
Editors.
"Justin Irvin and I have prayer nights together because I like to do meditations and prayer, and so does he on his own. But then when we do it together, it just feels more powerful. And that power when you're praying, it's like, oh, do you feel that? I can see that. You know, you just be praying like, God, you know, I want you to bless this pussy that I'm about to eat." Rubber dub dub, time for the grub. Blah, 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 blah. Now I can see that, though. I mean, whatever you practice in your relationship, if y'all want to bless the sex first, I mean, that to me, that mean they probably having the more freakier sex.
Come on.
Like, they feel like they need to be blessed up, put some holy water on this before we go in and do what we do. Like, they might be doing all kinds of shit, you know? It's like, if God gonna see this, we're gonna have to pray first, you know.
But like, you might have to turn around on this one.
Some of this is some of the other, in the other chapters of the Bible that's not cool, so. But good for them, man. She also had a piece of advice for married couples who may be experiencing a rough patch in a relationship. Have sex all the time, even if you don't feel like it, just have sex. "I have found that if you haven't had sex, we get snippy, and then if we are having sex, we are all over each other. For us, it's like, oh, let's have sex, and then we're just right back in a great mood." I don't do relationship advice, so I'll take that if you will. I don't know how people get down their own relationship and what makes them feel better and whatnot. Like, I assume it's different per couple, but, you know, I do think that physical bond in a relationship does help, though.
Mm-hmm. You know? It does bring you closer together, and a lot of people do get snippy and stuff like that, because being intimate is a form of like a release from stress and things like that too.
Yeah, and then, you know, kind of remind you who you with, what you there, like, because everybody when you first get together has that ooh, I can't wait to get with you. And then, you know, over the years, especially people that get kids and jobs, long
you're
distance,
you're not intimate as much. A lot of times studies will show you have kids, you're not as intimate as
you're getting
much.
Older,
you come on, your body, you can't be like that no more.
I saw an article said Big Sean gave what is that chick's name, Jaheen, just Aiko, whatever her name is, one of them littles, as Karen would say.
Come on.
He gave her 9 orgasms, and I know I'm old now because I went, ooh, that's a lot. Mm-mm. Ain't nobody got plans for that for the day. Like, dang. You know, you get older, like at 23, I'm like, I give a 9, or I give, I'll be in that pussy all day. You know what I'm saying? But
nigga, I got shit to do. Now you get to the point where you be like, you finished? Oh, okay. Right. You play this. It'd be like, you good? I'm good. All right. Cause you know, you can't give her that back breaking sex. She like, nigga, I need my back.
Right. I was planning to do errands today, and now I have to lay in the bed and recover. This is crazy.
Come on. Now I gotta go to the chiropractor. Nigga, what the fuck's wrong with you?
When are we eating? I had brunch scheduled, and now
I had plans for mimosas, and now that shit is dissolved.
It was funny because my friend circle is getting older too. So on Facebook, when Janelle James shared the article, all the women, you know, in her thread was like, "Who got time for that? What's wrong with these people?"
Come on, I'm serious. I'm like, serious. What? You be looking like, my hips don't bend like that. I'm not as flexible no more.
I'm just thinking, like, it's funny because we've all gone, we're getting older now, because there was a time where it was like, that would be the goal. Like, what guys is in a day? Shit, nigga, But now it's like, but then how am I going to the movies on time? Like, it's,
come on.
Like, but my what
favorite,
about the
my
kids?
Favorite show? Come on. The fuck is this?
You mean I have 24 hours without children? And I'm supposed to spend all of it orgasming? I have books to read.
Come on.
I'd like to take a nap.
Come on.
I can finally
go visit an old friend.
I can finally get my pedicure. Like, it's sad getting old, y'all.
Go get a massage.
It's sad getting old.
Come on. people is like, I got shit to do.
Oh, man. That's so sad. Nah, no. Yeah, June said, can I get 9 naps, right? So sad. It's so sad what's happening to us. When you young, you have the whole, like, life in front of you and all the time in the world, and you like, nah, gas him, nigga, I'll beat the pussy to bleed and shit. And now you like, now who wants a vagina to bleed? That's ridiculous.
that
I will break your back. I need to use my back.
Sir, now I got to go to the gyno. No, right. Thank you.
I can't go to the chiropractor. My insurance don't cover this. Can you just gently use my back? Just gently.
Come on.
You know what I'm saying?
Can you just bend that break? I mean, what's wrong with bending?
It's like delicates in the washing machine. Sir, this pussy is machine wash only, okay?
Dry clean only.
This is dry clean
only.
Come on.
Now you like, no, nigga, we gotta use pillows. Can we?
Right.
But like this, I am above the floor. Right. I do, my pussy does not do floor no more.
Right. Like,
floor does not give.
Non-orgasms is like, it don't matter if we have sex on the floor. Like when it's not orgasm time in your life, it's like we could have this sex in the backseat of a car. It just doesn't matter. The brake shift is in my spleen. It don't matter. We're having sex. And then now it's like people dating in their 30s, late 30s or 40s. It's like, how many pillows he got in his bed?
You like, oh, I got standards now.
How many? That couch looks rough. Okay.
How many thread counts? Ooh, that thread count too low. No, thank you.
No, I'm good.
Is this the type of the blue, the purple mattress? What's right. You call it?
Purple mattress.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I don't know about this one. This is silly postopedic. I don't know if I should.
Just sleep number.
Yeah, what's your sleep number on this side of the bed? Because I'm going to need to adjust this for this nap.
Come on. You be looking like, is the mattress on the floor, bitch? No.
Right.
I got standards for this pussy now.
It turns from like, I don't want no minute man to like, I can't be having sex all day. So
can
what
we
you
wrap
need
this
to do
up
is,
in under a minute?
What you need to do, I'm just messing with y'all. I know everybody's having great sex forever. I'm just joking.
And then you wonder why old people at the Sunrise Special at 6 a.m. beating the hostess there, because we got shit to do, y'all.
Look, I know y'all have Megan Thee Stallion's knees and sex goes forever, okay?
Nigga, no.
I take everything I said back. Sex is great forever. 9 orgasms minimum or I'm out.
Well, then I don't know what you with me for, nigga, because no.
Sex to the break of dawn. Then get up and work. Get up and go to work.
Right.
I don't know who this lady is. Mara Higgins. But she was sizzling in lace top. She's not shy when it comes to putting on a show-stopping display at many a showbiz event. And Mara Higgins didn't disappoint as she posts racing at an Ann Summers meet and greet in Blanchardstown Shopping Center in Dublin, Ireland on Saturday. The Love Island 28 sizzled in a lace cutout bralette and leather trousers as she met over 300 adoring fans in her native country. Wow, that must be a big deal over there.
Must be. Still don't know who she is.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously, if we're talking about her here.
I hate to say it. I hope I don't sound ridiculous. I don't know who this man is. I mean, he could be walking down the street. I wouldn't know a thing. Sorry to this man.
She is a brand ambassador for the lingerie giant, and sure, she dressed to impress for the occasion in her daring cleavage-bearing top, which featured a zip-up leather panel. A tick warm in the chilly winter weather, the star added a chic black to her look, allowing her leather trousers and crop top combo to do the talking. Mara added a simple pair of black heels. The former grid girl styled her raven tresses into a dramatic high ponytail while she applied a generous layer of glam makeup to her face.
pretty.
She appeared in good spirits as she happily waved to fans and posed with pictures at the event. Her racy appearance comes after she insisted she's not ready for marriage after a psychic predicted she and her boyfriend Chris Pritchard will be engaged within six months. Well, that all depends on how focus tests with the audience. Earlier in the month, the lingerie model revealed a psychic claim Love Island's Curtis will pop the question early next year. Admitted she's far from ready to tie the knot, Mara said at the event, "I never said that. This morning psychic predicted that. God, no, I'm not ready for marriage. I got nothing to worry about. You never know what's around the corner." The bombshell also revealed she prefers to keep her romance out of the spotlight, despite forming a relationship on TV. Okay. She explained, "You guys think Curtis asking Mara to be his girlfriend took longer than it was? We're very secretive. We get asked a lot of questions, but I just lie. I'm just lucky that it worked with Curtis." Oh, Curtis, he's such a good guy. Her upcoming Dancing on Ice stint. Damn. They do Dancing on Ice there instead of Dancing with the Stars? Oh, they took it to the next level.
Don't fuck around and fall through the ice. You might not make it.
What kind of liability?
That's how they eliminate contestants. You just fall through the ice.
what kind of liability waivers do you have to sign? You got to sign one of them Kaepernick waivers to get
on that show.
The media personality revealed that while she takes light in skating, she feels intimidated by other contestants' talent. The social media sensation shared, "I'm definitely progressing. I'm really enjoying it, and I didn't think I would. I've had some lumps and bumps. My biggest competition, well, I got a lot of competition, but Perry Kylie, and Ian Watkins is, also good. Caprice has also come a long way." Or is it Caprice? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think Caprice's the salad. Anyway, that's white people news. So that's why I don't know how to pronounce it. Caprice, like the car, right?
Caprice, like Capri Sun?
I don't know. It was C-A-P-R-I-C-E. So probably Caprice. I think that's how you say that. Taylor Swift has accused Scooter Braun and Scott Borchetta of holding her music hostage.
Yeah, she been going back and forth with this bullshit, ain't she?
Yeah, I saw this on Twitter, and you know me,
keeping
man.
In their agendas.
I always have a soft spot for Taylor Swift because I feel like as a 29-year-old, I watched her grow up. And it's been harsh on her, you know, a lot of the stuff around her, and a lot of it not her fault. And some of it is her fault, like every single fucking person, but the agendas around her and what she needs to do and stand for is so ridiculous at some point. But she is... it's funny, as she starts to be more outspoken and grow into her own voice, you see people move the goalpost in real time on her.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, in an extensive statement published on social media, Taylor Swift claims that Scott Borchetta, the head of her former record label, and Scooter Braun, who brought the master rights to her first six albums earlier this year, are not allowing her to use any of her old songs in a forthcoming Netflix documentary about her or in performance at this year's American Music Awards.
Yeah, they got it out for her.
That's really, that part is really important because the American Music Awards, if I'm not mistaken, she's being honored. So she's getting like artist of the decade, and these men own the right to her music and won't let her use it.
My thing is like, you're gonna get money out of her. She has to pay you for the right to the shit anyway. Just take her money.
But Shedda and Braun will only allow her to make use of her music if she agrees to not re-record the songs that they own and if she stops speaking out about them. So they're trying to silence her. Swift claims, earlier this year, she published a similarly impassioned statement against Braun and his acquisition of her master recordings. Scooter also manages several artists who I really believe care about other artists in their work. Please ask them for help with this. I'm hoping that maybe they can talk some sense to the men who are exercising tyrannical control over someone who just wants to play the music she wrote. Yeah, and I saw people being like, oh, she should go playing the victim again. I'm like, sometimes she is the victim.
Yeah, sometimes she is.
I don't know.
Sometimes she is, like everybody else.
Yeah, just like all your faves, sometimes she is a victim. What's taking her so long to stand out, to speak out about stuff? Man, we didn't know how Beyonce felt about a lot of shit until about 5 years ago.
Come on.
And then we was like, what? Oh, hold up. So it's even more than just feminism. This is like some super pro-black, pro-military, militant blackness shit that you're doing, pro-woman shit. Like, come through, Beyonce, and we all was with it, you know?
Yeah, and for a lot of us wouldn't even speaking out online or on social media about Black Lives Matter or any of that. So everybody grows and evolves.
Yeah.
Everybody changes.
So she become more outspoken and actually earlier than a lot of people.
Right.
Earlier than a lot of people. People that we don't require to be outspoken. But
I don't even ask.
Yeah, but I think after that Kanye shit, she became a placeholder for all white women. So it's just not, you can't say anything to her credit without some motherfucker trying to rush in and make her like into some virulent racist piece of shit.
And the thing is, guess what? She didn't vote on the fucking award. Somebody else did.
Yeah. So yeah, but it's crazy that, because what I kept thinking is, it's Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift is like somebody. She's a big ass name. If I told somebody like, yo, you know, Taylor Swift doesn't control her own musical like archive, and like the people in control of it would rather silence her than allow her to pay them to buy herself,
right? And she's probably offered to pay and they probably right. turned her down.
Yeah, she did. It's just wild to me, and I'm like, who else does that tap into? Because we only know Taylor Swift because she's so big, she can go on her platform and really say that. But what other artists do we look at that are not as big as Taylor Swift, that aren't as successful, that aren't as privileged as Taylor Swift, that we're like, yo, that maybe that's why Lauryn Hill can't perform a fucking Miss Education. That's mm-hmm. maybe that's why maybe that's what happened to Cash Doll. You know, what's going on with SZA? You know what I mean? Like, y'all, like, if you stop at, well, I don't like this person, so I'm not going to consider this point anymore, then you miss all the shit that can happen to the people you do like. But most people are not that fucking savvy or that well-intentioned or have that much integrity, so they just stop at, I don't like this person, I'm not going to consider the fucking bigger point you're making. And to those people, mute, unfollow, block, whatever the fuck, I don't need to deal with it. But it's so funny to see people like do this weird type of back and forth where they claim they stand for the principles until it's somebody they don't like.
Yes, sir.
So because remember when I talked about the people suing folks for music, everybody was cool mm-hmm. with it. Then it's like, now it's Cardi and Lil Nas X and shit. Now it's like, okay, well, hold up. Hold up now.
They shouldn't be able to do that.
This isn't right. Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't right the whole time.
Mm-hmm. That's why people are like, no. You don't need the general public who don't fucking know about this. You need people to actually in the industry that can actually tell you if there's a true difference.
And luckily for her, she's privileged enough to take the consequences of speaking out. Because one of the things, like when Kesha was doing this with Dr. Luke and he shut her music down, guess who gave Kesha money to hold her over? It was Taylor Swift.
Yeah, and Taylor,
and she didn't do it and put it all in the public. Mm-hmm. She wasn't all out there. Like, it got exposed because Kesha came forward, and their people was like, well, y'all saying she don't do nothing for women, but she did this for me.
Right.
I say I was raped by this man, and he controls my music and my destiny. And she didn't just hashtag feminism stand with Kesha. She actually put some money on this shit and helped me get by. You know, like, people don't like the shit when it's not convenient, you know. But I'm not gonna do another rant, but it frustrates me, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I was talking to my friend today. I said, this is why I have five friends, because I have five people I trust to be like, you know what, Rod, I don't like to have to concede this point, but I get it, you know what I mean? Or I can at least admit that, you know what, dog, I can't really be fair about this, so I'm gonna go ahead and just bow out of this conversation. I'm like, cool. I do that sometimes.
Yeah,
shit, we've had topics on here where I'm like, I can't, you know what, I don't like this person so much, even with them being wrong, I can't, you know what I mean? So I get this wrong, I'm not gonna pile on or whatever, I'm not gonna try to make it seem like it's okay for this person to be whatever, but I just don't fuck with them like that. People can't even do that with Taylor Swift. They will make a whole ass argument on why it's okay to silence a woman in this case, you know, but not others.
Correct.
It's also weird when people are like, so every racial relationship is every breakup in her songs is the man fault and she ain't, so she just playing the victim. I'm like, nigga, I've been listening to Mary J. Blige talk shit about men my whole life, and I believe every song. Every song. Not once have I taken I ain't took Casey's side not one time.
And I ain't took Kendu's side.
I ain't said, you know what, Mary, the common denominator for 12 albums is you. I say, girl, these men ain't shit, girl. Turn it on, let's drink some brown, and let's do it, okay?
Ooh, and men have rapped about women.
Yeah, get the fuck out of my face. Oh, moving the goalpost ass niggas. Sarah Palin claims she found out that her husband Ty Palin's divorce filing, she found it out through an email.
Duh!
Now see,
he just CC on it.
Now see, this is me being honest. This is exactly what I was talking about. I can't be fair to Sarah Palin. Like, this must be terrible.
Right, to find out through email.
I don't care. Because I don't like her. And I can be honest about it. Sarah Palin claimed that she first learned about her husband Ty Palin's plan to file for divorce via email. Yeah, everybody knows that should be a snail mail, certified letter through the post office. The former Alaska governor, 55, opened up about how she felt after the oil field production operator, also 55, seeking to end their marriage after 31 years. She told Christian author James Dobson that the discovery was devastating and added that it felt like she got shot. I found out from an email from an attorney saying that she was hired, and that was on June 19th. I'll never forget it, she explained in the second half of her two-part interview. What could she be talking about for two parts?
I don't know. Her and it sounds like if he sent her email, they probably would not communicate with each other.
It must have been bad.
Yes. Yeah. It must have been so bad that he was like, send that bitch an email.
Right. I found out from an email. Then on Ty's birthday, a week after our 31st anniversary, is when he filed. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's not easy to talk about. He waited a week.
He gave you the courtesy.
Nigga, you knew it wasn't all good.
Like I said, you knew it wasn't all good. For him to send you a email, y'all probably have not been sleeping together in a hot minute.
A real petty king would have did it on the anniversary. So he's a better,
come on, a real
better
king.
Man than a lot of men, okay? If he was dating Taylor Swift, he would have did it on the anniversary, and it would have made a song. I'm sure so many of you, either maybe you've been through it, or you have people whom you love, you've witnessed how horrible it is, but I just think, wow, maybe except for death of a child, I don't know what could be more devastating. She also suggested that their long-term marriage isn't necessarily over, as she revealed that the pair are going through counseling now.
Are you going through counseling now?
He filed for divorce. He cited incompatibility of temperament between the parties. The commercial fisherman also stated, wait, what does he do? I thought he ran an oil thing.
I don't know.
He also stated in his filing that the difficulties in their marriage made it impossible to live together as husband and wife. Oh, damn. They tied a knot in 1988, and their parents, of course, to Track, Bristol, Willow, Piper, and Trigg. According to the Anchorage Daily News, a couple are also seeking joint custody of Trigg, who was born with Down syndrome. I don't know why that was part of the article. The former vice presidential candidate once joked,
because that's the only child that's underage.
No, I mean the Down syndrome part. Okay. Could just said the youngest child, Trigg. Was relevant to the.
I'm with you now. You have to say that.
The remark first, it's like, man, I'm not gonna say that now. The remark first surfaced in February 2012, when she said that her marriage would eventually meet its demise. That remark surfaced in February 2012 after state officials released 17,000 records, which were initially obtained by the Associated Press as part of a Freedom of Information Act request. It was discovered that she mentioned the concept in September 2007 email while governor. Her spouse was copied on the memo along with her aides, Chris Perry and Frank Bailey. Oh, so they one of them people that always be breaking up, and now this is just the latest version
of them breaking up.
So speaking of, when we get a divorce, does that quell conflict of interest accusations about BP? She wrote, jokingly referencing her husband's work on the oil company's Northern Slopes pipeline. Bailey added, very funny. So maybe it was just a joke. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You never know with these white folks, man. Sometimes they be getting divorced and you be like, what's happening? Finding out during for email though, that's gotta be terrible for you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll do one more for white people news. We've been going for quite some time here. It's time for us to get out of here. I have an appointment with the NFL and I'm gonna move it to a high school, and I'm wearing my Django Unchained shirt, so I gotta get dressed.
Well, I'm not going to see you.
What? The media needs to see this, Care.
Well, you let them.
What if I did that? I got YouTube live and I got like 100 people to come out and watch me be terrible at football.
You could do that.
In a Django Unchained, in a crackers shirt or something like that. That would be a good parody.
People would show up.
It'll be terrible. Like, I'm just out there like, I'm trying out for Michael Jordan and the Charlotte Hornets. I'm very upset. I'm very pissed off at some of the things that he has done, but I'm gonna try out, and then I just take off my shirt to say cheese eyes. It's got a pair of mom jeans on it.
Oh no.
And I just shoot a bunch of air balls and shit, and I'll be like, as you can see, I belong on the Hornets because they suck. Okay? I can do that. Anyone can shoot them air balls. No. I'm just kidding. We're great this year, guys. NYC psychology professor secretly moonlights as a white nationalist co-host of Richard Spencer's podcast.
What?
Oh, it must be nice to be white. For years, Joshua Deeks has taught psychology at New York City's public and private universities. Students of Kingsborough Community College describe him as a modern professor, easygoing and informal. Plays guitar in his spare time and maintains a hypnosis practice in downtown Brooklyn, providing emotional counseling and assertiveness training. He was an adjunct at St. Francis College just a few blocks away, as recently as last fall. But when he's not teaching undergrads or hypnotizing passive men, Deets is lecturing under another name, Josh Neal, avowed white nationalist and co-host of Richard Spencer's podcast.
Does he change his color in his hair like on the videos? What's up with that?
What videos?
The pictures at the top. Ain't that two versions of him?
No, it's him and Richard Spencer, I think.
Oh, that's him and Richard Spencer.
Yeah, Spencer's on the left.
I'm about to say, he looked like two people.
Why was he putting his face out there knowing that?
Come on.
What was he thinking? I mean, not that I want him to get away with it, but like, damn, whiteness must be good. He never even thought, like, I should probably do this in like a mask or off camera. You know, I got a whole job and shit.
Why worry about it?
Yeah, I mean
it was, you know, just spend and bring him back with pay, spend with pay, bring him back.
I mean, where's this article? I guess I don't know.
With the right white man, we can do anything.
Operating under a thinly veiled moniker, Deets hosts the McSpencer Group alongside Spencer, perhaps the best known American neo-Nazi and founding member of the so-called alt-right for hours at a time. Deets and a rotated selection of guests help plot the future of the white identity movement, touching on subjects from eugenics to Kurt Cobain, a symbol of white displacement, to the negrofication of American culture.
Ooh, not the negrofication.
That's the problem with Kaepernick. He out here negrofying these motherfuckers. Y'all ever see it?
I guess I'm part of the negrofication movement.
I looked in the stadium. I said, these white people becoming negrofied.
Nobody told me.
You ever just see a black person, you be like, you are a negrofied motherfucker, boy. Let me tell you. Looking all negrofied this morning. Where you going? Church? Where you going? Oh, church of chicken?
Oh, whatever. Negro fights.
You going to church of chicken? You must be going to Popeye's. You got real negrofied. I can tell the grease. They can't speak eloquently, they can't dress a particular way, they can't show enthusiasm for education or career advancement, or I don't know, monogamous healthy relationships without a wedlock children, said Deets during an episode with author Colin Flaherty, recorded earlier this year. Flaherty, incidentally, was the voice behind the explicitly racist video that NYPD union boss Ed Mullins apologized for sharing this summer. You saying the police shared some white supremacist video
and then was like, oh, it's my bad,
and deleted it? You think I'm a fool? I might have been born yesterday, but I might have been born on a Saturday, but I wasn't born yesterday. Okay, I don't believe they deleted it.
They probably didn't. Shit, just like I don't believe nothing Donald Trump say.
I believe everything except the delete. You really can't trust them, says Duke. Oh wait, I'm sorry. Deets frequently appears on similar podcasts to his own show, No Apologies. He has featured guests such as Patrick Little, who believes Jews should be raised as livestock, and notorious neo-Nazi David Duke. What? In a conversation with Duke earlier this year, he asked about the issue of right-wing figures maintaining relationships with Jewish people and whether it makes them emotionally blind to criticism.
Wow.
You really can't trust them, said Duke. The only Jews that I really have any respect for are those Jews who expose Jewish power, expose Jewish racism, and expose Jewish efforts to destroy us. Following the lengthy monologue, Dietz replies, "That's so well said." Dietz's face is visible on his frequent video live streams, which often rack up tens of thousands of views on YouTube. Also, he don't need that job. And other streaming services, but until this week, the connection between the pseudonyms podcast and his public facing life as a professor and life coach were not widely known. The change followed a tweet posted on Monday from an anonymous account seemingly seen as part of an internecine fight with the alt-right that exploded this weekend. Oh, there was alt-right on alt-right violence.
Mm-hmm. Arguing. People arguing. They'll pull that shit out.
Can't we just alt-right get along?
Apparently not.
As a scholar, Rodney King said. That exploded this fast. So wow, that's how we found out. After the far right personality Milo Yiannopoulos leaked audio meant to humiliate Spencer. "My ancestors fucking enslaved those little pieces of fucking shit," Spencer shrieks, reportedly reacting to blowback to the bigoted Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. "I rule the fucking world." Yes, the white man who got a Hitler haircut and wore a suit, and white people told me how sophisticated he was. Look at the new face of the alt-right.
They dared march his ass out like that, yeah, a few years ago. When people go, "That's a fucking racist. What are we talking about here?"
Right. Oh, a racist. Racist can tie ties. What? Well, now we need to hear him out.
Mm-mm.
The tweet was followed by an investigation by It's Going Down, an anti-fascist blog that linked Josh Neal to Joshua Dietz.
It's Going Down.
The article noted that Dietz plays guitar for Jimmy and the Band, an experimental six-piece with an openly gay frontman, for their electrifying performances. The band was scheduled to headline Arlene's Grocery next month, though that listing has since been removed. What? Y'all don't stand for freedom of speech? I guess the tweet said, at Richard B. Spencer, your boy Janiel Dietz, the community college professor and hypnotist who in his spare time competes with Lil Wayne for most embarrassing guitar solos of all time. Did we mention he's in a band with a cross-dresser, a bleg, and a Jew? I don't know what a bleg is, but all of it sounds racist to me.
Right.
Dietz also runs a hypnotherapy practice, Transformation, out of Court Street building overlooking Brooklyn Borough Hall. On his website, thedietzmethod.com, he refers to his services as hypnotist, counseling, and the life coaching. You think he take black customers?
No.
He knows that he received, maybe that's what happened to Kanye, he knows that he received a master's in clinical psychology, but does not specify where he earned his degree. The Umar Johnson School for Hotepery. We all know that. A call to a number listed for Dietz was answered, but the voice hung up after I identified myself as a reporter. He also did not respond to email requests for comments.
No, of course not.
Oh, you got everything to say on your little podcast. Former colleagues and students.
Now fucking up his money.
Right. Former colleagues and students of Dietz said they were horrified to recognize a professor's face in chummy videos of Spencer's and other white supremacists. Anthony Alessandrini.
Yeah, because he wanted both ways. Like, he wanted to be on both sides.
Maybe. I don't know what he teaches about at that school. He could be sliding in some supremacy in them lessons, Karen. Don't sleep.
Okay, with his gay drummer and all them people you just said, too.
Girl, Milo Yiannopoulos is gay.
Okay,
you know what I'm saying? Like,
I'm with you. Okay,
they might, I mean, they might not know, or they might know.
That's what I'm saying. I'm assuming they don't, but yeah, they could know. And just,
no, that whiteness strong, Karen. I hope they don't. I hope you right.
Yeah, my ignorance, my innocence is going, they didn't know.
I hope the gay dude is as shocked as the rest of us, but you just do not fucking know these days. I don't put nothing past nobody. Okay.
Yeah, we just playing, because that's the thing. Nobody knew at the college, sound like. And so it sounded like these were like separate worlds that just happened to collide, yeah, because this dude put it up.
Maybe. I hope so. I hope you're right, Karen.
I hope I am too.
Because, you know, he was out here podcasting for hours at a time. Anthony Alessandrini, a professor in the English department of Kingsborough Community College, recalled interacting with Dietz multiple times in the wake of the 2016 election. Days after Trump's inauguration, Alessandrini shared tips on the faculty listserv about protecting CUNY's undocumented students. "Please stop including me in these emails," Dietz wrote back. "For one, it's propaganda. For another, you're clogging my inbox with garbage." A spokesperson for Kingsborough Community College confirmed that Dietz no longer teaches at the school, but refused to provide additional information about why he was let go and how long he spent at the university.
you can see how long, but you know.
Reviews on Rate My Professor indicate he taught there as far back as 2012.
Yeah, but you know, they ain't got to tell you. That's their quote unquote internal investigation.
According to a since deleted LinkedIn page, Diesel has also lectured at Brooklyn College, York College, Queensborough Community College, Megar Evers College, and New York City College of Technology. Inquiring about to those schools were not inquiries were not immediately returned. Yo, Megar Evers College, for real, dog? What else is he talking? Sojourner Truth College, and
that's why I think that they were two separate in these was actually just two separate worlds. Mm-hmm. And he didn't ever think they were going to collide until this happened, and then everybody was like, the fuck. I might be wrong, but
I think you're right, because as I'm reading this, that sounds like you wouldn't invite him if you knew he was on that. Mm-hmm. Man, Megar Evers College, for real? You know what he got to do, Karen?
What?
He got to lie and say he was infiltrating the white supremacists, not the other way around. That's mm-hmm. how you get out of this.
That's how you get out.
I was writing a book. I was researching white supremacy, and it's called I Infiltrated the Alt-Right. Okay, so
that's what the next podcast is going to be.
A spokesperson for St. Francis College, where Deese was listed as an employee director until Friday morning. What happened Friday morning? Said that he last taught there in fall 2018 and will not return as an instructor in the future. Further questions were not answered. I'm shocked that it happened, and I'm shocked that there isn't more of a response. The reaction seems more about ass covering to take responsibility, said Allison Drini, who noted that Kingsborough is a majority non-white school. Fuck, students are aware of this, and if they're not hearing about it from their college, what message is being sent to them? You know, he was turning in the motherfucking anybody a document. He probably was like, don't put me on this list unless you find some. Then I'm gonna protect them real good, so you send me the names. One of the CC Ice, why you CCing Ice on the emails, huh? What? One of those students was Jocelyn Alexis, an undergraduate at York County in Queens, who learned his online identity through a Facebook post Thursday night. She said she took an intermediate psychology class on maturity and adolescence from him last spring. It's scary and bizarre. York is like 80% black, Alexis wrote in a message to Gothamist. Honestly, nothing stands out about him, and I can tell you he seemed pretty normal. Wow, he wasn't even saying it. Wow, Karen. You're right. He wasn't even sliding into his lectures or nothing.
I really do think he was living too, because that's the privilege of being white. Until the Yannanopoulos was, you know, until they had the outright on outright violence, nobody would have known.
They must have caught him slipping at some point. Guys, don't forget, we don't have class next Monday. It's Martin Luther King Jr. King Jr. Day. Just see you guys Monday. Bye. Conversation on his shows, Deese occasionally refers to his own path towards white nationalism. He started as a traditional conservative, so he was already a white nationalist. Then he became involved in men's rights circles, writing.
Ooh, that sounds like that hole went deeper.
Writing for Return of Kings, a pickup artist website. White nationalism and womanizing, hand in hand, and the self-publishing.
Is the next one is a sign up for something else, bashingwomen.com.
A self-publishing book billed as Politically Incorrect Guide to Dating is what he did. After that, he self-published that.
Mm-hmm. Self-published misogyny.com.
He was once a fan of Gavin McGinnis, the Proud Boys founder, but over time has come to regard that strand of the alt-right as too moderate.
Ooh, too moderate.
Speaking with Spencer, he frequently describes the path to building power for our little community in the years to come. We need to make being white and have a family and believing in something beautiful again, he declared on an episode from earlier this year. The alt-right is the last stop on the train. We'll be here with arms wide open. And he also goes on to say, Dark Knight is better than Black Panther. Wow. Whoa. No one even asked, bro.
Where did that quote come from?
I don't know. I don't even know. That's an article. That's crazy to me too, Karen. Good grief. Can you imagine being the kind of person that agrees with that? Anyway, guilty plea in La Mesa sword slaying cold case. An Oregon man who fatally stabbed a La Mesa resident multiple times with a sword in 2006 pleaded guilty Wednesday to a voluntary manslaughter charge. Zachary Bunny, 39, is slated to be sentenced to a dozen years in state prison on December 18 for a slaying of 47-year-old Scott Martinez, who was killed in his apartment June 17, 2006. Prosecutors have not disclosed a motive for the slaying nor the men's connections to one another. After the investigators say the case went cold, they submitted a DNA left at the crime scene for genetic genealogy testing, leading to his arrest in Oregon. So they got him through like 23andMe or some shit.
Apparently.
Mm-mm-mm. He is white, by the way. All right, y'all. That's it. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. We had a good time, other than, you know, the first like hour and a half of the show. I hope you guys enjoyed this long episode. Until then, I love you.
I love you too. Mwah.